It's all about who's next.
Who let the
big dog
out?
Who
let the
big dog
out? Who let the
big dog
out? Who let the
big dog? Hey, listen, fuckhead. You can do whatever you want to do. You can put me on mute. You can turn the goddamn channel for all I care. What the fuck are you doing? I'm hosting a goddamn national television show, and you're listening to us now. So obviously you didn't hit the fucking mute switch tonight, asshole.
It's business time, baby.
The Solar Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Fight me.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Wow. I guess Michael Cole finally got tired of me mocking him for all the big dogs in Boss Times. Where's that Michael Cole on commentary? This is episode 641 of the Solar Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 1st, the first day of March, 2020. I am the Solar Monster, a tired Solar Monster. I got about 3.5 hours of sleep after the stream last night. It was a busy week. 3 top title changes in WWE, AEW, and Ring of Honor. In the last 72 hours, Goldberg won the Universal title Thursday in Saudi Arabia. Jon Moxley won the AEW championship just last night in Chicago. And Roosh pinned PCO in a 3-way last night in St. Charles, Missouri at the Ring of Honor Gateway to Honor show to regain the ROH world title, ending PCO's reign at 78 days. But first, we talk about the AEW Revolution pay-per-view, which did take place last night in Chicago, and an excellent show from top to bottom on the stream last night. I think I went as high as 8.5, probably about an 8, but I could push it to an 8.5. I wouldn't go higher than that. I have very high standards. Yeah, the next time you see a pay-per-view get a 9 out of me, you better stop everything you're doing and go watch that show. Those are very tough to come by, but this was an excellent show from top to bottom. My third live stream in 4 days. So thank you to everybody. We had a lot of people who joined for all of the streams. We had Dynamite on Wednesday. We had the Saudi show on Thursday afternoon in the middle of the day. And then late last night, it was a late start for the Revolution stream. So thank you to everybody who joined me. If you missed it, it's archived on YouTube. You can listen to the whole thing, watch the whole thing, all 2 hours of it. Or you could just listen to the review portion and then cut things off if you don't want the phone calls and the other discussions at the end. But it's all there for you. And so you could check that out. Twitter poll right now. Over 3,600 votes in the poll at Solomonster. You can still vote on Twitter. So far, it has 87% thumbs up and 13% thumbs down. So a positive, highly positive score. Jon Moxley is now a double champion. He can now add AEW World Champion to his titles, along with the IWGP United States Championship. Don't forget, he still has that U.S. title as well. I saw that Renee Young was at the show last night, cheering on her man. She has a photo on her Instagram of Moxley posing with the championship on the rope, so she must have been in the crowd. Apparently she was backstage as well, but she was obviously in the crowd to watch her man become the new champion. He beat Chris Jericho last night. Jericho got a choir entrance, which he referred to on social media as the best ring entrance that he has had in almost 30 years in the business. They had Meredith Bell joining with a choir, singing a cover of his song Judas. And it was really cool. Actually, I thought both the entrances for the main event were great. Moxley, they had a camera outside the Wintrust Arena follow him into the building. So normally they would just follow him from the crowd. They followed him all the way from the outside into the building, through the concourse, through the crowd. I thought that was really cool. And the Jericho entrance was great, but I said this on my stream last night for those who have never heard this rendition of the song before. If you want to hear a haunting cover of Jericho's song, and I think I like this version as good or more than the actual song, go on YouTube, and I see a lot of people have already commented on the video, so clearly they were checking out this girl's video, but you can go on YouTube and search for Mariah Page. Search for Mariah Page's version of Judas. That's P-A-I-G-E. You'll see, it's just her with her guitar and her at home in her bedroom or something, just doing her cover of Judas. And I hope that he can get her to sing him to the ring one day with that version of the song. That girl's got talent. Some other notes on the pay-per-view last night. Obviously, my full recap, you can go back and watch the stream. I don't have to recap everything here. But Moxley did get busted open hard way in the main event. When he got his head busted open, he hit the ring post. And in the media scrum when the show was over, he had a really kind of a deep gash, a nasty gash above his eye on his head. He said he was seeing triple out of the one eye he could see out of because he had the eye patch on. So he was seeing triple for the rest of the match, and he thinks he was probably half concussed, which is always a delightful thing to hear. So anyway, that's what happened with him in the main event. And as far as who the next challenger is going to be, we were having a whole discussion about this last night on the stream, and then during the phone call portion as well. You know, looking at the rankings that they have on their website, which they try to stick to in storyline, you know, Cody is near the top of the rankings. Cody is out of the picture because they still have the storyline where he can't challenge for the championship. So you take him out of the equation. And that really, I think, leaves one of two people. MJF is the most likely option. He beat Cody last night. He's still unbeaten in singles, I believe unbeaten in singles matches. Or Pac. Pac still has a pretty good win-loss record. He got a win last night. He beat me, or Orange Cassidy, got the big win last night. We had a match between them already, but maybe they rematch them at some point on TV or something. So that's where they may be going with Moxley. Lance Archer, who I'm going to talk a little bit more about later, is going to be making his debut this week on Dynamite, and he's got history with Moxley. Although I don't expect him to just walk in and get a title shot if they want people to take these rankings seriously. Cody lost to MJF, but that's not even the big story. Big story is Cody got a neck tattoo. I think it's only the second tattoo he's gotten. He has a dream, the word dream, on his on his chest, his tit, whatever. And that, I believe, is the only ink that he's had in his life up to this point. And you look at that tattoo, and you look at what he's got on his neck. Those are from the movie Venom, the symbiote, whatever. I took one look at that at first, and I'm like, it looks like he's being overtaken by the symbiote or something. So, after the show was over, they had media interviews with different performers, and they were interviewing Dustin, and Brandy was there with him. Apparently, Brandy is now going to be transitioning into a managerial role, not for Cody. She's not going to be coming out with Cody anymore. Cody's going to have Arn Anderson. But Brandy is instead going to become a manager for the new tag team of Dustin Rhodes and QT Marshall. That's going to be the new, I guess, the new tag team that they're going to be pushing. So she's out there doing the interview stuff with Dustin. And she flat out said she don't like that tattoo. She said, it's your body, you can do what you want. She's a lot more understanding than a lot of wives might be in that situation. I mean, it's one thing to get a tattoo, right? If your husband gets a tattoo. But this is, it's on his neck, and it's in a way where, like, if he's, you know, dressed up for a business meeting or something, you can't cover that shit up. Like, it's pretty noticeable. It's not something you could easily hide. But she made it very clear that she is not a fan of it. And I put some pictures, close-up pictures of it last night on the stream, and the, I think a lot of people were of the opinion, yes, it's his body, he can do what he wants, but yeesh. Not a good call there by Cody. The Tag Team Championship match, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page against the Young Bucks was just outstanding. The Darby Allin match, it was one of those two matches. Pick your poison as far as what my favorite match on the show was. Probably the Tag Team title match, but I really liked the Darby Allin match as well. But I have to say this, after all of the discussion, and there's been a lot of it lately, to the point where Omega has had to address it. All the discussion about Kenny Omega. What has happened to Kenny Omega? Where is the Kenny Omega that I knew from New Japan? Where is the Kenny Omega that would go out there and have all of these classic matches and these long 30, 40-minute marathon matches? Where is that Kenny Omega? What has happened to him? Maybe he should have gone to WWE. All these different opinions of Kenny Omega. In the span of 3 days this week, Omega turned in back-to-back Match of the Year caliber performances against Pac on Wednesday in the 30-minute Iron Man match, and then again here on this show in one of the best tag team matches that you will ever see. So he did a lot in the last few days to silence, I think, a lot of those critics, and now we'll see going forward what they do with him and Hangman, because clearly they're still building to a split between the two of them. I said last night, the three names, the three stars on the rise, who I think saw their stocks rise even more last night to watch out for, who really came out with just a tremendous night, were Hangman Page, Darby Allin, and Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy opened a lot of eyes last night. Maybe he'll never get above a certain level, but all the people who said he's a one-trick pony, he's just comedy, why is he signed, I think he shut a lot of those people up last night. You could see at least why they would have signed him and wanted him to be part of their company. It's a popular act. The people are into him. Even more so, Darby Allin. Darby Allin is, he could be a superstar on the path that he's on in this company right now. He's got something that not everybody has. And then, of course, there's Hangman, who I'm sure is well on his way to getting a world title at some point in the next 12 months. So those are the three names that really stood out more than any other to me last night. Colt Cabana is officially signed with AEW. He's going to be working as, I guess, part wrestler, part producer, part announcer. And Tony Khan said he will still be able to work indie dates. He'll still be able to work dates for other promotions. He came out on the pre-show to the aid of SCU when they were being beaten down by the Dark Order. So Colt is now officially in. And last but not least here, they did make an announcement of the March 25th episode of Dynamite from Newark, New Jersey, which is sold out. They're going to have over 10,000 people, legit sellout, in the building. They are calling that episode, it is a blood and guts episode of Dynamite. And they're going to feature their own version of War Games, two rings, one cage. And they are calling it, I thought they were going to call it the Match Beyond, because that was one of the trademarks Cody either got or was trying to get, but they're going to call it, Tony Khan said it's going to be called a blood and guts match. So you know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get blood. You know you're going to get weapons. It's a War Games match, but he was very, very careful to tell people last night when they said, oh, it's like a War Games match. He goes, no, we're not calling it that. We're not calling it that. He didn't want to get in trouble. He said they're calling it a blood and guts match, which is a play off the Vince McMahon comments he made a number of months ago about how TNT, they don't like blood and guts. Well, they're going to like it on one night, March 25th. There is a Merch Madness sale ongoing on Pro Wrestling Tees right now. It's going on for another 24 hours or so. So if you want to get 20% off all shirts at our store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. You can show your support. Just punch in the code MADNESS at checkout and you can get yourself 20% off. And of course, you guys know the drill with Audible. Good sponsor of the show, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Get yourself one free audiobook of your choice that you get to keep no matter what. And you can listen to it anywhere you want. You can listen to it on the go. You can listen to it at home. You can listen to it in the shower if you have a waterproof device. That just seems weird to me, but you can do that. Just use our link when you get your free book. If you want to become a PayPal VIP, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on this podcast. And I got to say, you guys killed it last night with the Super Chats on the Revolution stream. And you killed it on the PayPal stuff this week as well. So I got to show my love for the Bangkok Bandit, Nipit Viramatikal, one of my biggest supporters. So thank you to him. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. Paul popped up on the stream last night as well. Thank you, Paul. Deadpool James Herrera. John Loose Cannon Lopez. The Florida Freebird Brian Pacera. Deathblow David Floyd. You know, for all these friends that I have, all these PayPal friends that I have, nobody came out to help me last night in my match against Pac. Very upset about this. So yes, Deathblow David Floyd, thank you. Velvet Revolver Robert Murray. The Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard. Killshot Keith Hart. Stephen Handyman Halistic, Max the Axe Velado, the Always Radiant, Ray Wrighton, the Maniac Moderator, Jeff Lippman, who does a bang-up job maintaining law and order in the Facebook group. He's like my big boss man. I mean, I'm the boss man, but he's like Ray Traylor, right? Only he doesn't cook people's dogs and feed it to them like Ray Traylor did to poor Al Snow. Let's all pour one out for Pepper. Let us not forget that whole storyline from 20 years ago. Actually, 21 years. Raymond the Mountie Medina, Texas Hangman Michael Hanna, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep. It was good to talk to Harrison on the live stream on Thursday. Jared Dark Knight Mysterio, who says his dad Ray's finishing move is the 516. Yes, I learned the other night on the stream that his father's name, for real, is Ray. Ray Mysterio. I guess it's M-O-S. Ray Mysterio is the guy's name. Only he's from the 516, not the 619. I love it. I used to live in the 516 back in my college days. The Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel Camelotes, Ryan the Dagger McTaggart, Daredevil David Conahan, No Nickname Required, Joshua Garrett, the Mississippi Mauler, Cameron Tipton, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, Josh the Shooter Stockton, Agent of Chaos, Corey Barnett, All I Do Is Win, Anthony Gambino, Jason the Boner Ventura, which is a play off of his last name. There was actually a character, if you remember, on Growing Pains. How many people here are old enough to remember Growing Pains? There was a character on that show, Kirk Cameron's best friend, called himself Boner. Unfortunately, and I was curious, I said, I wonder what Boner's been up to. No pun intended. So I went online to see what Boner has been up to, and unfortunately, the actor who played him hung himself many years ago. So that was unfortunate. It's also unfortunate that I'm talking about someone being hung in Boners, and I'm not trying to be funny. That's how the wordplay worked out. I legitimately had no idea the guy killed himself. So on that dark note, I want to wish a very happy birthday from Jeannie and myself to the Irish Wolf, Simon McGee. I did talk to Jeannie this week, and she wanted to make sure that we gave you the shout-out that you deserved here on the show. I told her not to worry about it. Of course, I would take care of it. I always know when it's Simon's birthday. Simon's a good friend. Simon McGee, back in the ring after having a partial knee replacement this past summer. Last night, I was covering the Revolution show. I could not make it out to celebrate, so we'll have to save that for another time, but I'm glad you're back in the ring, my friend. We got to get you some of that sweet Saudi money. We got to figure out how to get you over to Saudi Arabia for one of these shows. Get that big sweet Saudi payday for the Irish Wolf. Happy birthday, brother. And thank you to Mr. Real 21 and CJ Setterland for the love on iTunes. CJ's been listening to this show for the past 8 years. Imagine that. 8 years of listening to my voice. Jonathan Newman has a new short story up on Amazon called Rome, R-H-O-M-E. It's a crime novella. A Greyhound bus rolls into Rome, Texas, but no one gets off. Well, almost no one. Something has entered this small, peaceful desert town. Just type in Jonathan's name. Again, his last name is Newman. And then type in Rome, again, R-H-O-M-E. And it should be the first thing that comes up on Amazon. Short story, give it a read. If you missed Super Showdown, just watch my review. You'll be far more entertained by the slides that Steve Mello and I put together that you saw on your screen. And shout out to him, he did a bang-up job on that. And also, what I did something a little bit different during that review. After each match, I gave it a match rating. So it's not like a star system, but on a scale of 1 to 5, I decided to give each match a little rating of its own. I don't usually do that. People seem to be receptive to it. So my question to you, I put it out to you. Should I do more of that or just leave that alone? But if people enjoyed it, I might do that more often on the big reviews. You guys can let me know. It's something a little bit different. Twitter poll, over 5,400 votes in for Sweet Saudi Money. And what a glowing score this show got. 7% thumbs up. 55% thumbs down. 38% did not watch. I'm not fond of putting the didn't watch thing in there anymore. I'm not going to make a habit out of that, but I felt like I had to. This is, I mean, the show aired at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday, so I knew there were going to be a lot of people who did not watch. 7% thumbs up, 55% thumbs down. I, for one, cannot wait for a sweet Saudi Money 6 turning tricks for the Saudi prince. If you did not watch the pay-per-view, you missed nothing outside of two title changes, including one that if you blinked, you would have missed it. The Miz and John Morrison, they are the new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Probably the best thing on the entire show, beating the New Day. And Goldberg, who said that he only had 3 weeks' notice to prepare for the match, became the first man to beat The Fiend. And in so doing, he is now the new Universal Champion. And as it has been pointed out on social media, we now have the same champions on Raw and SmackDown that we had at the end of Survivor Series in 2003. I don't know whether to laugh or cry. Goldberg, right out of his garage, did what Finn Balor, the Monday Night Messiah, and Daniel Bryan could not do. And that is beat The Fiend. And beat The Fiend decisively. It did not take him 10 minutes to beat The Fiend. He barely broke a sweat. I mean, he was sweating. I mean, he's 53 years old. But didn't take a whole lot of effort for him to put down The Fiend in a matter of minutes. He beat him in 2 minutes. 2 minutes after 4 spears and a suplex. That was not a jackhammer. He may have been trying for a jackhammer, but that was no jackhammer. He beat The Fiend with a suplex. The same Fiend who no-sold everyone else's offense. One suplex pins The Fiend. In fact, it was a great night. Not only for Bill Goldberg, it was a great night for The Undertaker, and it was a great night for Brock Lesnar. All three wrestling for a combined total of under 6 minutes on this show. Now, given some of the people, you know, Undertaker probably shouldn't be in a match much longer than the one he had anyway. Undertaker's entrance lasted longer than his match and Brock Lesnar's match combined. And if you think I'm exaggerating, I'm not. He pinned AJ Styles with a chokeslam in 20 seconds to win the Tuake Trophy. Brock Lesnar, you knew he was going to dominate. You knew the match would be short. That was to be expected, and it wasn't the incorrect outcome, but they did not even give Ricochet one lick of offense in that match. 3 German suplexes and 1 F5 later, and any value that Ricochet may have had left, poof, gone with the wind. They buried his chances of ever being taken seriously ever again as any kind of threat. And you know I don't use that word very often because I do think that's an overused word. A lot of people don't know what it means. I don't throw that word buried or bury around very often. They buried his chances of ever being taken, of me anyway, ever taking him seriously ever again. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when whoever it was, whether it was Paul Heyman or Vince McMahon or Paul Levesque or whoever it was, when they came into the room to tell Ricochet what the plans were for his big match that I'm sure he was looking forward to. I'm sure when he won that triple threat match on Raw all those weeks ago and realized, hey, I'm going to get a big championship match with Brock Lesnar. I mean, he had to know he wasn't going to win, but he probably was looking at that and going, hey, this is a big opportunity for me. This is maybe the biggest match of my career. I get to go in there and work with Brock Lesnar. I get to go in there and show people what I can do. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they walked in and told him what the plan was for this match. So, hey buddy, come over here. So here's how it's going to go. Brock's going to throw you around, and then he's going to pin you. And then you can hit the showers. Oh my goodness. And looking at these 3 wins that I just mentioned made me think of another trio of wins. From Fully Loaded 2000, which was one of the best shows that entire year, was that Fully Loaded show. You had Undertaker working with Kurt Angle, who was still a new guy on the rise. You had Triple H working with Chris Jericho, who was also a young guy on the rise at the time, right? He had come over from WCW the year before, was very popular, but he was still the new kid on the block in WWE. And you had The Rock. The Rock defending the WWE Championship against Chris Benoit, who was still relatively new to the company. He had only been there about 6 months up to that point. And all of the veteran WWE guys that night beat the new guys. Undertaker pinned Kurt Angle. Triple H beat Jericho in that classic last man standing match. And The Rock retained the championship over Benoit. They did a false finish at first where The Rock lost the belt because he could lose it by DQ. But then the match got restarted. You could look at that 20 years ago. Exactly 20 years ago this year. You could look at that and say, my God. Some things never change. Only the faces change. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. Look at the veteran guys crushing the new guys. But Triple H gave Jericho the best match of his career up to that point. Only by the skin of his teeth did Triple H make it back up to his feet before the count of 10 and win that match. And Benoit hung in there with The Rock, and he was never really made to look less than. And we all know Benoit could have wrestled circles around The Rock. But Rock was one of the biggest stars even then in all of wrestling, and he made Benoit look like his equal. If you were a top guy back then, no matter what Vince McMahon told you to go out there and do, or Pat Patterson told you to go out there and do, if you were a Rock or a Steve Austin or an Undertaker, you were going to go out there and do whatever the hell you wanted to do. And if you didn't want to do business with somebody or put them over strongly because you didn't like them, or you thought that they're not one of us, or they're disrespectful to the business in some way, but those guys would take matters into their own hands, and they wouldn't work with you. They could make you look like shit if they wanted to. But they didn't do that. They worked with the new guys, the young guys, and even though they all lost, they put them over. They still came out of that pay-per-view stronger for it, even though they all lost. Now, maybe not everybody would agree with that assessment, but they gave them something. Something to make you want to see them again. Something to build their career for the future. Fast forward 20 years, and here, they gave these guys nothing. They don't come out of this show stronger. Just the opposite, in fact. They come out looking weaker. Now, AJ Styles is going to be fine. He's a made man. AJ Styles is going to be just fine. Ricochet is done. Ricochet is finished. And The Fiend is not finished. The Fiend may end up being okay, but The Fiend lost a piece of his mystique that he could never get back. A piece of his mystique that should have been held on to until at least WrestleMania. And so we now have here a situation where Vince McMahon sees that, hey, we're 5 weeks out from WrestleMania, and we need attractions to sell the show. And if they end up moving some of these pay-per-views to ESPN Plus in a few months, people have to pay full price for them again, possibly, then how do you get people to buy the shows? You need attractions. Well, you do things like this at your own peril, because at some point in the not-too-distant future, you're not going to have these attractions anymore. 53-year-old Goldberg is going to be 63. 75-year-old Undertaker is going to be 95. Triple H, he's winding down. He doesn't even have a match scheduled for WrestleMania this year. When those guys are not available anymore, then what? I get that they're available now. That's why they feel the need to use them. But where do you find that next big attraction? There is a place for these guys, but not at the expense of your talent roster. That well with the legends is going to run dry at some point. And in the meantime, people wonder, how come they can't make new stars like they used to? Braun Strowman and Daniel Bryan and the Roman Reigns. Yes, they're stars, but it just doesn't feel like they're stars on the level that guys used to be stars. How come they can't do that anymore? Because they don't want to. They either forgot or they don't want to. And by the way, I do think there is something, and we've talked about this before, where, John Cena may well have been the last true kind of breakout star coming from WWE. What I mean by that is, I don't think this company wants any one person to be bigger than the company the way that Rock became that, you know, larger than life star. John Cena, now he's branching out into Hollywood. And there have been others, you know, Hogan, people who transcended WWE. The whole thing where back in the day you put their name on the marquee and they could sell tickets. And now you don't do that now. You just say WWE is coming to town and that either sells tickets or it doesn't. It's actually selling less tickets than ever before. But I don't know that they want that necessarily. I don't know that they want to have a star as big as some of those guys were. I'm not convinced that that's even what they want anymore. The fact of the matter is that they live in the here and now. It's all about short-term pleasure and pleasing stockholders and trying to get the immediate numbers up. That's what they live and die by. So what's going to happen is maybe you'll get some of those lapsed fans back for WrestleMania. Maybe. Who do you think they're appealing to with guys like Goldberg and The Undertaker? They're trying to bring in some of these lapsed fans who aren't watching the product anymore. So yeah, maybe you'll get some of them back. But when WrestleMania is over, you're giving these people absolutely no reason to stick around. Because they're going to see a talent roster that does not appeal to them, because why the hell would it? So they'll disappear again off into the wilderness until next year's WrestleMania. They don't care about the idiots like you and me that watch week to week. They focus their efforts on trying to get back the people who left them years ago. We're like the nice guy boyfriend who's trying to give the girl everything she wants, but she doesn't give a fuck about us. All she's interested in is getting back together with her ex, who dumped her. And maybe she'll get him back for one night. But he won't even be there when she opens her eyes the next morning. And I think it's going to be real bad news for them if they don't start doing a better job of protecting the talent that they have right now. SmackDown Friday night, you got Goldberg walking out with his shiny new title, and the Boo Birds were out in Boston. They did not like William Goldberg in Beantown. They weren't much happier when Roman Reigns walked out either, but at least it was more of a mixed reaction, a little bit more, you know, positive when he came out. Some fans started a "you both suck" chant. I think it was only a few people, but it got picked up on TV. But Goldberg said, "Who's next?" And out walked Roman Reigns, who said, "I am. I'm next." And the match is now official. It will be the Battle of the Spears at WrestleMania. Goldberg, who supposedly 3 weeks ago was not even penciled in on the WrestleMania card, and 2 weeks ago wasn't even scheduled to beat The Fiend, is now in the main event of WrestleMania defending the Universal Championship. It's nice to see them planning ahead for their biggest show of the year. I'm not even saying there's no appeal in doing a Roman Reigns-Bill Goldberg match. But this did not need to be for the title. But they want that Roman Reigns WrestleMania coronation. They took it away from him at WrestleMania 31. He got it at WrestleMania 32. They didn't give it to him at WrestleMania 34. But they're going to give it to him at 36. They have kept him away from the title picture for a year. Vince McMahon can wait no longer. But this did not need to be for the championship. My bigger issue is that you can do the match without having to make The Fiend look so weak. And I know people are going to say, you're making a big deal about this. He came out on stage the next night. Listen to the crowd. People have already forgotten what happened. You don't just forget about something like that. Don't forget about your first loss. I love how people can just disregard it. If none of this stuff means anything, then what's the point of any of this? What is the point of any of this if your argument is that nothing means anything? They can do anything they want to. Nothing matters. Oh, great. Nice. That's good to know. This did not need to be for the championship, but it's the way that they did The Fiend dirty on that show, the way that he lost. That's really what irritated me more than anything else. And yes, it is kind of goofy that Roman can walk out and just say, I'm fighting for the title. And at the same time, everybody else needs to qualify for a title match. Drew McIntyre had to win the Royal Rumble. Charlotte Flair had to win the Royal Rumble. Shayna Baszler's got to win the Elimination Chamber, even though she bit a chunk out of Becky's neck. She's got to go into the Elimination Chamber match. And Roman walks out and grabs a microphone. They canceled an entire Elimination Chamber match because it was so predictable that he was going to win anyway. And so they just canceled the whole match. I mean, at least this spares us having to see Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin in the same ring again, because you know they would have been in the chamber match. You know for a fact they would have been back at it again in that Elimination Chamber match. So at least this spares us from having to see the two of them in the ring together again. But poor Sheamus. You know, maybe when he talked about entering the chamber match last week, maybe he was referring to the women's chamber. I mean, I guess if he can't win the Intercontinental title to become the ultimate Grand Slam champion that he said he wants to be, I guess the women's title will have to suffice. Now, before Super Showdown, and it's funny to me how many comments I've gotten from people telling me they legitimately did not know the name of the show. They would just refer to their friends and people as, oh, hey, you're going to watch Sweet Saudi Money? And they'd be like, what? Because I have made it a point to call the show Sweet Saudi Money, and I'm going to continue to do so because that's what they are. But I say it so often that sometimes I don't even say the actual name of the show. I don't say Crown Jewel all the time, or I don't say Super Showdown. And people legitimately don't know the name of the show. I think it's hilarious, actually, how many people have said that. But before Super Showdown, Roman was interviewed. He was asked, who would you prefer to face at WrestleMania, Goldberg or The Fiend? And he said, The Fiend. He said, no offense to Goldberg, but The Fiend's busted his ass all year to get to this point. He was talking about it as if it was like a real out-of-character interview, even though it was clear to me that this was all part of the work. It was being done to tie in with what the storyline is likely going to be for this match at WrestleMania. They had to know that Goldberg was going to be booed when they got back on American soil and he walked out on television the next night. They had to know there was at least a very good chance that the reaction would be negative when he walked out. And what they're doing here is they're running the same storyline that they did with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar 2 years ago, heading into WrestleMania 34, which did kind of work. To a point, it did kind of work to rally the fans around Roman Reigns that he's full-time and Brock Lesnar is a part-time piece of trash. What was it? What did he say? Hiding behind his contract. Remember that? They had Lesnar advertised to appear at a Monday Night Raw show, and then they intentionally kept him off the show to sell the fact that he, quote, no-showed, so they could send out Roman Reigns to cut a work shoot promo about Brock and saying, the people in the back, I may get in trouble for saying this, but, and then he went into work shoot mode. He said, Brock Lesnar's not here tonight. He no-showed. He doesn't respect me. He doesn't respect any of you. He doesn't respect any of the boys in the back. He's too busy snapping selfies at the UFC show in Vegas with Dana White. I'm full-time. I travel everywhere. I bust my ass for this company. And it did work for at least a few weeks. I don't remember it working at WrestleMania. I think he still got booed there. But it looks like, and it's still early, we'll see, but it looks like we're fixing for a similar storyline possibly here with Bill Goldberg. Not that he's going to no-show and go full heel. But even Corey Graves at Super Showdown after Goldberg won, he was making comments on commentary about how now you've got to be full-time. You know, we can't have a part-time champion. You've got to be full-time. So we're back to the same story to make sure that the fans are solidly behind Roman Reigns. And what's funny is that it kind of worked the last time, and he lost anyway. After all of that, they get to WrestleMania, they do Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, and I assume because they just, Vince McMahon probably said, well, everybody assumes Roman's going to win. So to swerve us, they had Brock beat him clean right in the middle of the ring. Now, he was booed horrifically when he got to Mania. I was in the building that night. People did not like Roman Reigns, and they didn't like Brock Lesnar. So actually what it achieved was instead of having at least one guy in the match that people liked, which would have been Brock, yeah, they got us to hate Brock, but we also hated Roman. I say we. I mean the collective people in the building that night. So what you ended up with was a match where the crowd just completely shit on both guys, which might explain why when Brock Lesnar got backstage, unless you think it's all a work, if you remember from that 24 special they did, the first thing Brock Lesnar did when he got to the back, he took that Universal title and he threw it across the ring. I think he threw it at Vince McMahon. He chucked the belt at Vince and he stormed off to the back. He was not in a good mood. And look, I don't blame him. You get that kind of reaction out there, the people just completely shit on your WrestleMania main event. He probably had flashbacks to the match with Goldberg at WrestleMania 20. I'm sure Brock really wasn't in a very good mood that night. But after all of that, they beat Roman anyway. They had him. They took six F5s to do it, but they beat him clean. I couldn't believe that. All of this brings us to the return of John Cena, which was good enough to give SmackDown its biggest TV audience of the year, 2.7 million viewers on Fox. He got a hero's welcome in Boston. And what have I said before? Pay attention to what Michael Cole says, what they have Michael Cole saying on commentary whenever John Cena makes an appearance now. It is a company directive. They are using the greatest of all time tagline for John Cena, and he did it again on Friday. That is their official narrative, that John Cena is the greatest of all time in WWE history. John Cena himself says that Brock Lesnar is the greatest of all time. They would both be wrong. But anyway, Cena says, you know, he's passionate about the future of WWE. And so this year, because he's teasing what he's going to do, he says, this year I'm going to do the right thing and I'm not going to go to WrestleMania. I'm going to stay out. I'm going to sit this one out. WrestleMania should go on without John Cena, is what he said. This isn't goodbye, but it's the right thing to do. And he says, WrestleMania spot should be earned, not demanded. Now, I want you to remember that line, okay? WrestleMania spot should be earned, not demanded. Remember that. So he goes to leave. He gives us one final salute, the Marines salute on stage. All of a sudden, out go the lights. And when they come back on, we see John Cena standing there. He's still saluting, although he's got a very concerned look on his face. But the camera pans ever so slightly to the left, and standing, I don't know, 5 feet, 5 or 6 feet maybe behind him in the background is The Fiend. And what does this monster do? What does this monster do? Why, of course, he points to the WrestleMania sign. If I could send a rocket into that sign and blow it up, I would. They have The Fiend pointing now at the stupid WrestleMania sign. But that's not even the kicker. We could all laugh about that, how silly it is. The kicker is that after just telling us that WrestleMania matches are earned and not demanded, and how it's the right thing for me to step aside this year, The Fiend comes out, he points to the WrestleMania sign, and John Cena nods his head in approval for a match at WrestleMania. What? You cannot make this shit up. You cannot make this shit up. We've got to make room for the future. Matches are earned, they're not demanded. The Fiend shows up, he demands a WrestleMania match, and John Cena accepts. I actually thought that the camera cutaway looked cool. You know, they have a knack for that sort of thing. They've done it before NXT. Remember the first time they did that with Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream? They did something similar. That was incredible. They did something a few months ago with Keith Lee and Finn Balor. They've got a knack for these camera shots. But as cool as it looked, I thought that part was well done. But I swear, this show is written by 9-year-olds. I know that the show is written for 9-year-olds, and I'm way outside their target age range. I get that. But it's also written by 9-year-olds. Keep in mind that The Fiend did not seem to care about having lost the championship 24 hours earlier. He didn't come out when Goldberg was in the ring. He cares more about a match that he lost to John Cena 6 years ago. And on Twitter, in response to a fan, Bray said that, you know, in explaining why the story makes sense with him and Cena, he said it has to be where it all began. He says it's a circle. Here's the deal. They never should have put the belt on The Fiend in the first place at Hell in a Cell. That is their cardinal mistake that they made, was putting the championship on him. And I said at the time, I loved The Fiend, I loved what they were doing with him at the time, and I said when they made that announcement, came out of nowhere, he wrestled one match at that point. That was the win over Finn Balor at SummerSlam. One match he had. And they put him in a championship Hell in a Cell match with that stipulation at the pay-per-view back in October. And I said at the time that they painted themselves into a corner. The moment they announced that match with him and the Monday Night Messiah, they had to put the belt on him, which they did albeit it took a few more weeks. They didn't do it on that show. But they never should have rushed to put that championship on him. Someone on my timeline hit the nail on the head. They should have treated the Fiend like they treat Finn Balor's demon. Something that is used sparingly, and when it is, he's dominant, he destroys his opponent, it's a big gimmick, it gets over, it feels like a big deal, but then you don't see it again for a few months. Keep the Fiend special. Let Bray wrestle most of the matches when he does wrestle. I wouldn't have him on TV every week anyway. But save the Fiend for those big matches where he wears the mask and the whole outfit, and then months down the road, you could belt him at that point. But that was one of their more boneheaded decisions that they made, was to rush that title onto him, especially seeing how it all ended. So now the Fiend gets his win back, I guess, at WrestleMania. He gets to avenge the loss that, in many ways, marked the beginning of the end of Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30. 6 years later, the Fiend is going to get his win back over John Cena. But I think WWE dropped the ball on this. Roman Reigns and Bill Goldberg does not need a title on the line. John Cena and The Fiend should be for the Universal Championship. The story should have been John Cena comes back. He realizes that, hey, I don't got much time left. I love coming out here and seeing you guys, but I realize I'm closer to the end of my career than I am the beginning of it. You know, my career almost feels like it's winding down. I've had the honor of holding that championship 16 times. I'm using championship, by the way, for all of the belts. The big gold belt, the WWE belt, the Universal belt. 16 times, right? He tied an icon in Ric Flair. And now he wants to go to WrestleMania to hold that gold one last time because it means so much to him. There's no bigger prize in the world. But matches are earned and they're not demanded. So I am officially throwing my name into the Elimination Chamber match. And you have John Cena as one of six men in the chamber match, and he wins. And he gets the match with The Fiend, and you build the match up as John Cena trying for title number 17. Which would break Ric Flair's record that they talk about so much. At the same time, you can have Wyatt bring up their WrestleMania 30 match and how I owe you one, right? You know, I've never forgotten about what you did. I've never forgotten about that loss at WrestleMania. And maybe they could even tell the story that his manic personality could be traced all the way back to that match at WrestleMania 30. So both men now have a need to win at WrestleMania. There's so much at stake suddenly here in this match. And John Cena does not get title number 17. I don't know that John Cena is ever going to get title number 17. I've heard that he doesn't even want title number 17 because he doesn't want to break Ric Flair's record. Now, I don't know how true that is, but I've heard that. So my plan would not be to have John Cena win at WrestleMania. You build up the number 17 story, but he falls short, and The Fiend gets a win over him at WrestleMania. And Cena puts him over. For all the drama around number 17, he falls short, and he puts over The Fiend. That is how you tell that story. Roman and Goldberg is an attraction that can stand on its own. The Rock Hogan dynamic from WrestleMania 18, the past against the present. Right? One generation against another. Spear against spear. And when Roman wins, he could chase for the title after that. Give Drew McIntyre his fucking moment. Why does Roman Reigns have to have the moment at WrestleMania? Why does it have to be in Tampa? Can't you give Drew McIntyre his fucking moment to stand alone? Let McIntyre get the championship celebration. Let him get the pyro. Let him get the confetti at WrestleMania this year. Roman can get his coronation another time. Sad tweet of the week also doubles as savage tweet. Or is it sarcastic tweet? It goes to Bray Wyatt. A fan tweeted him about Miz and Morrison losing to the Usos on SmackDown and said, "So you booked your brand new tag team champions to lose clean in a non-title match? Are they trying to completely destroy their characters?" And Bray, rather timely, responded with one word. Yes. Sarcastic? Or is that how he really feels? Did we see a little bit of that honesty shining through there on Bray's Twitter? I don't know. But maybe that's the point. Also on this SmackDown show, I may as well finish up here instead of coming back to it later. Sasha Banks returned in her hometown and lost, tagging with Bayley against Lacey Evans and Naomi. Naomi pinned Bayley, which means that issue is not over. If there's a women's chamber match on the SmackDown side, it could be Naomi winning. and getting another match with Bayley at WrestleMania. Maybe Sasha instead gets programmed with Lacey Evans. God, I hope not. God, I hope not. But there's supposedly 16 matches penciled in for the WrestleMania card this year. 16 matches. That's a lot of matches. So they might just split them off like that. They might want to have Sasha in her own match and Bayley in her own match and not put the two of them together. So we'll see how that plays out. We do know there will be a tag team elimination chamber match for the titles next Sunday. Miz and Morrison will defend against the Usos, The New Day, Heavy Machinery, Ziggler and Rude, and the Lucha House Party. Interesting that there is no Revival. We have the Lucha House Party, who we never see, but the Revival is not in this match. So they have stuck to their guns, by all accounts, and they could very well be on their way out of the company very soon. Bobby Roode beat Kofi Kingston. Dolph Ziggler was ringside for the match. When it was over, they cut to Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville watching on a screen backstage. And Michael Cole noted that Sonya referred to Dolph as Mandy's man. And then in another segment in the back, Otis was telling Tucker, that something doesn't feel right about this Mandy and Dolph thing. Tucker's telling him, look, dude, sometimes the guy just doesn't get the girl. Finally, a storyline that wrestling fans can relate to. He says, you've got to let Mandy go. And I'm watching this and I'm listening to Tucker, and I'm just thinking, they're going to do it, aren't they? They're going to reveal that Tucker and Sonya both conspired to sabotage the love shared by Otis and Mandy. That's where I think this is headed now. I'm still loving this storyline, though. It's kind of taken a step back these last few weeks on the show, ever since the Valentine's thing, but it's just such a simple little background story on the show. Not even the Saudi prince can ruin it for me. And the contract signing for Elimination Chamber and the rematch took place on this show between Braun Strowman and Shinsuke Nakamura. They are going to have a rematch for the Intercontinental Championship. It will now be a 3-on-1 handicap match with Strowman taking on Nakamura, Cesaro, and Sami Zayn. After Braun signed the contract first, he said, I don't care if I got to wrestle all three of you. And Sami made sure to put that in writing. And they all laid out the giant afterwards. First time we've seen Sami deliver the Helluva kick in a very long time. He gave two of them to Braun Strowman. So Braun is going to go to Elimination Chamber next Sunday and squash all three of them. And I can live with that if he then drops the belt to Sheamus at WrestleMania. Because I kind of feel the same way. I want to see Sheamus get that title. Clearly it means a lot to him to win the Intercontinental Championship, the one title he never won. I'm not like a huge Sheamus mark or anything like that, but you know, he's been dominant since he came back. And clearly it means something to him, and I think WrestleMania would be the right place for it. You know, and who knows, you know, him and Braun, maybe they have a good big man match. So we all know Braun's going to wipe out the heels next Sunday. There ain't nothing you can do about that. It is what it is. But my prediction is that he goes on to WrestleMania and drops the title there to Sheamus. After at first only canceling talent meet and greets, New Japan Pro Wrestling made the decision this week to cancel many of its upcoming events due to the coronavirus outbreak. The company released a statement on Wednesday saying, in light of recommendations made by the Japanese Ministry of Health connected to the new coronavirus, New Japan Pro Wrestling has decided to cancel all live events scheduled between Sunday, March 1st, that's today, and Sunday, March 15th. All ticket holders will be refunded. New Japan has reached this difficult decision after careful consideration. Ultimately, the health and safety of our fans, staff, and wrestlers is our highest concern. And they list all of the affected events. It includes their anniversary tour. They had dates scheduled for today and tomorrow. Those are canceled. Their 48th anniversary show was scheduled for this Tuesday in Tokyo. That's canceled. And a lot of the New Japan Cup tournament dates have been canceled. All of the dates between Wednesday, March 4th, which would have been the kickoff of the Cup in Tokyo at Korakuen Hall, all the way through Saturday, March 14th in Chiba. All of those dates, and it's a total of about, I think, 7 or 8, have been wiped out. They have been canceled. And who knows how many more events may still be canceled after that. You know, right now it's through March 15th. If they don't get a handle on this, or in Japan, if it gets worse, it could go on even longer. They could extend it out maybe for the rest of the month. Now, the next big event after the New Japan Cup is their Sakura Genesis show, which is slated for the very end of this month, March 31st. And again, that could end up being canceled too. But if it isn't, because they still need to do the match with Naito and Hiromu, that was going to be taking place, I believe, on the show this Tuesday, they still got to get that match in. They can maybe have that match on the Genesis show, but then what do you do with the tournament? What do you do with the New Japan Cup? Because you've got half the dates gone. Right now, the tournament dates on March 16, 17, 18, 20, and 21 are unaffected for now. And so I would have to think that if they want to get it in, they can cram everything into those remaining dates. Although one listener wrote in suggesting that they move all of the New Japan Cup dates to the company's tour in April, which builds to their wrestling Dontaku shows on May 3rd and 4th, and then the winner, whether it's Sanada, I had picked Sanada to win the New Japan Cup, whether it's Sanada or whoever, the winner would then challenge for the IWGP title at Dominion on June 14th. Sounds on the surface to me like that could work. I mean, it's too bad because I know New Japan usually has their stuff booked out a long time in advance. I mean, sometimes even a year or more in advance, Ghetto does. But this is going to disrupt a lot of their plans. I mean, look, what are you going to do? Safety first. Got people walking around in masks. There were a lot of cases in Japan. They're still diagnosing new cases in Japan. Japan's a lot closer to China than we are. You got to do what you got to do. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to run all empty arena shows? Like Stardom is doing with one of its shows next month. Stardom is running an empty arena show, I believe, later this week. Or next weekend, maybe. I think it's March 8th. But I think the date here in the States is March 7th, 9:30 p.m. They're going to be airing the show free on their YouTube channel. If you want to see what an empty arena show for Stardom looks like, it will be broadcasting live and free on their YouTube channel. One show is fine, but you can't do that for every show. You can't run empty arena shows night after night after night. It's just not practical. You know, but it's scary stuff. I mean, look, on Friday, I've been following this whole thing. On Friday, the government in Hokkaido, the second largest Japanese island, there was an AP story. They declared a state of emergency and told everybody to stay indoors. 5 million people on that island, they told everybody to stay indoors. Don't go outside. You know, United Airlines just canceled all flights to Japan until the end of April. So this is a big deal. Is it being overplayed in some circles? Of course. Of course, people play it up like it's the plague, it's going to wipe everybody out. I don't think it's that bad. But you also can't just sit back and say, oh, it's much ado about nothing. No, it's having a big effect. when flights are being canceled in or out of a particular country for 2 months, I'd say that's a big deal. And that's going to affect a lot of people. And the question is, how, if at all, does this end up affecting WrestleMania? WrestleMania, now they have fans every year coming in from all over the world. Countries from Asia and every continent. You know, now I don't think WrestleMania is going to be canceled or anything like that, but it could have an impact and it could create headaches for promotions and leagues far beyond Japan. Stephanie McMahon, she gave an interview to the Tampa Bay Times. She was asked about the coronavirus and she said they don't want to put anybody at risk. And they said discussions internally are taking place right now as we speak about what to do if things get worse. They have to prepare for this. It would be malpractice for them not to. You know, they're about to put this big show on that's going to make millions upon millions of dollars and tens of thousands of fans are going to be coming in from all over the world. How do you not have a plan? How do you operate without having a backup plan in case things do get worse? So don't think that this can't impact WrestleMania or any of the surrounding events that are going on WrestleMania week. But there is a potentially even bigger issue brewing in Japan. The Olympics are coming to Japan this summer, which is why the G1 was pushed back to the fall for the first time. The G1 is not taking place until around September, October this year. I think October is when it might be kicking off around then. That would be a disaster for Japan if all of those Olympic events had to be canceled. Although maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing for the people who are going to be in Fukushima for the torch relay to kick off the games after that report that I saw on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel a few weeks ago on HBO Yeah, they want people, the government there wants people to think that the area has been decontaminated when it really hasn't. It has not been fully decontaminated. That report was scary. If you haven't seen it, if you have HBO Go or some other means to watch it, aired a few weeks ago. Go back and find that report. I mean, it's pretty terrifying, frankly, but if you want to learn more about what's going on over there in Fukushima, where they had that big nuclear meltdown all those years ago, things aren't exactly as they seem, or as the government there necessarily wants you to believe. But there's a very real possibility that the games could get canceled. This is according to Dick Pound, the longest-serving member of the IOC, the International Olympic Committee. Yes, that is his real name, Dick Pound. And here I thought Ricky Steamboat's real name was an unfortunate one. I'm not sure which is worse. Would you want to be called Dick Blood or Dick Pound? I would probably take Dick Pound. At least the ladies might like that. Dick Blood just sounds like a bad time for everybody. You should probably see a doctor. He says they probably have a 2 or 3 month window to see if they can get things under control. If not, they're more than likely going to cancel it altogether, then move it or postpone it if they do take action. If they had to take action, it's more likely to be a cancellation and not a case where, oh, we'll just move it to another city. They would just cancel it outright. So says the mighty Dick Pound. From a lot of the reading that I've done on this, you know, not that I'm Dr. Solomonster, but you know, there's a chance that we may all end up with coronavirus at some point. But it's not fatal for most people. It's mostly been fatal for a lot of older folks. They're the ones who have really suffered the more devastating effects. For others, it could end up being a really bad flu that you get. It likely wouldn't kill the majority of people who come down with it. And there are those who feel it could end up being the new seasonal virus to worry about every year. But the fact is, there are people dying from this. So you see the news reports, people are dying. Everything, you got to keep everything in perspective, though. When you hear about people dying and stuff, yes, it's scary. But look at the number of cases and look at the number of people who are actually dying from this. And, you know, again, it's scary, but it's not a case where, oh my God, if I get coronavirus, I'm going to, you know, write my will and testament. It's not a situation like that. But at the same time, I certainly wouldn't want to be exposed to it, would you? Especially if you're somebody that has, you know, young children. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be exposed to something like that. So if you're a wrestler or any kind of performer and you're doing a lot of traveling, if you're the promoter, you have an obligation. You have to take whatever steps are necessary to protect your talent and protect your business. So New Japan is doing what they feel they have to do. After I gave that shout out to WrestleVotes on Twitter last week, and I mentioned how they owned up and apologized for teasing a few weeks ago that Samoa Joe had failed a wellness test, something people in WWE vehemently denied at that time to websites like PW Insider. We learned on Tuesday that Samoa Joe has in fact been suspended for 30 days for his first violation of the wellness policy. You would think one would need to be well in the first place to fail for wellness, something Joe has not been in quite a while because it just feels like he gets hurt every other week. This does not mean that he did not get concussed during that commercial shoot, only that Vince McMahon knew about the test failure weeks ago and they chose not to report it until now because they control the information. They control the flow of information. They control whether or not they report on these wellness failures and when. It's completely at their discretion. And I can only imagine that they chose now because, you know, he's hurt. And so if he's going to be out for a while with a concussion, he's going to be out anyway. May as well get this pesky suspension out of the way. WrestleVotes first tweeted that tease, by the way, about a Joe suspension on February 3rd. A month ago. A month. They reported on this. And no, it was, no, it's a lie, it's not true. Well, it turned out that it was true. So, hat tip to WrestleVotes. WrestleVotes remains undefeated. I'm sorry I doubted WrestleVotes. 30 days means that he could be back a week before WrestleMania, assuming that he's healthy, but he won't be in any kind of prominent position, and I don't think he should be. Look, I would hold him out until the night after WrestleMania. If he's physically ready to come back at that point, just hold him out until the next night. You know, I cannot even blame WWE. How can you reliably put him in any kind of a spot of significance after all of this? How can you do it? The injuries, the suspension, whatever it may have been for, and we don't know what he failed for because they don't tell us, they don't publicly disclose that information. So of course everyone's saying, oh, he took a PED, he's on steroids, he's on this, he's on that. I said this a few weeks ago when we heard about the Andrade suspension. This is unfortunately what is going to happen every time somebody gets suspended for the wellness policy. People automatically assume it must be drug-related. It must be something evil and sinister that they did or took that they shouldn't have. And that's not necessarily the case. It could have been that they were supposed to be tested and they weren't where they were supposed to be and they missed the test or they were late for the test. It could be any number of things. It could have been something he took that he was prescribed. And maybe they didn't have the prescription on file for it. Who knows? Who knows? But because they don't tell us, what do people do? It's all rampant speculation about what exactly happened here. Yeah, but I like Joe. I like Samoa Joe. I was ready for him to get off commentary and come back and hopefully get a decent push, even though I thought he was great on commentary. And clearly, if he wants it, he's got a career at it if he wants it when he's done wrestling. But I wish he would have gotten that run that he never got on the main roster with the big belt. Not just he got the championship in NXT, but on the main roster. He never had that run. But now, I just don't see a path to make that happen. I don't see a realistic path to make that happen. This guy just has the worst luck. Now, for all of this talk about the future of the WWE Network, I did a whole segment last week on the rumors and reports about them negotiating with ESPN+. And we know they're negotiating with someone, if not multiple partners, because Vince McMahon admitted it on the last call, and in fact he said that there could be an announcement as soon as this month. We may have news in the next few weeks that they're going to partner up with ESPN+, or they're going to partner up with Amazon or Hulu to bring some of their events to one of the streaming platforms. And there's been a lot of talk that if that happens, there's going to be this mass exodus and people saying, well, that's it. I'm not going to be subscribing to the WWE Network anymore, because if they take the pay-per-views away, then what's the point? The fact is, the network has more going for it than just the pay-per-views. Case in point, two things I watched just this past week. First, the latest Broken Skull Sessions with Steve Austin interviewing The Big Show, I thought was an excellent piece of business. Austin had interviewed Big Show once before on the network, but they covered a lot more ground here in this interview. And Big Show, I think, is always a great interview. He just comes off as a knowledgeable guy. He's been around for a long time, you know, 25 years or whatever it's been at this point. And he's got a lot of stories to tell, you know, not just from the WWE days, but from the WCW days. And there aren't too many guys like that left. So just some key points here, some key takeaways that I thought were interesting from the interview. And you can watch the rest yourself if you care to do so. It was very brief. It was such a brief thing, but my ears perked up when he talked about this because I could tell from the tone of his voice that he clearly is still not very fond of Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He told this story or at least he doesn't think much of him, but he told this story about when he was new to WCW in the mid-90s, and Duggan was there, and the Giant was green as could be. He was new to the business. And Duggan offered to teach him how to play gin backstage. People would play cards and everything, and so Duggan said, hey, I'll teach you how to play. And he charged the Big Show $150 to teach him how to play gin. And I think he paid the money because he didn't know any better. But Duggan took advantage of him and said, I'll teach you $150. And he gave him the money. So once a worker, always a worker, I guess. But boy, you could tell just from the tone in his voice, and he even did a mock ho, that Big Show is no fan of Jim Duggan. He thinks it's great that the NWO is getting inducted this year into the WWE Hall of Fame, but he was not a fan of the way that they killed off all the babyfaces in WCW during their run. They played the cool heels, and if a babyface would ever threaten them, instead of showing fear or being intimidated, Scott Hall, for example, remember Scott Hall would do that thing, he would pretend to be scared, he'd put his fingers up, ooh, I'm real scared. And he said at that point, you're dead. If you're a babyface, you are dead. The moment that Scott Hall or anybody else does something like that. So he said, instead of losing to guys and putting them over, what would happen is they would be like, hey, why don't we have the Giant join with us and come join the NWO? And he said that he was too naive. He was too young and naive and stupid at the time to realize what they were actually doing. And that's why looking back now, he hated joining the NWO once he got hip to what they were doing. They were conning him. Instead of putting him over and making him look good, they had him join with them so they wouldn't have to do the job for him. So in hindsight, it doesn't sound like he's overly enthusiastic. He's not an overly enthusiastic fan of the NWO, even though he was part of it. And he loves Hogan. I mean, it's not that he hates those guys or anything. I mean, he's the biggest Hulk Hogan fan there is. When Hogan went into the Hall of Fame, they cut to Big Show in the crowd. He had the waterworks going. Because Big Show wouldn't be where he is right now if it wasn't for the break that Hogan gave him. So it's not a matter of him, you know, hating those guys or anything like that. But he's able now to look back and say, okay, I see what was going on here. I wasn't hip to the political game. Now I see it for what it is. And he's just not a fan of it. He said his favorite version of his character over the years was the version of Big Show we saw between 2011 and 2014. So not his WCW run, not his Attitude Era run or anything like that. He said for years, everybody would yell at him and would admonish him and tell him, work like a giant, work, you gotta work like a giant. And it frustrated him. He would say, what does that mean? Everybody's telling me work like a giant. What does that mean? And it wasn't until that 2011 to 2014 period that he said he really felt like he had finally put the pieces together. And if you remember, during that run, he won, I think he beat Cody at WrestleMania 28 for the Intercontinental Championship. And I think later that same, actually maybe the year before, that was in 2012. But the year before, he had won the World Heavyweight title and had a bunch of matches with Sheamus. And then later on came the Authority run. So he looks at that as his favorite version of the Big Show. He talked about The Undertaker. When they paired them up as the Unholy Alliance in the Attitude Era, he would chew the Big Show out all the time. He would critique every little thing that he did. He would yell at him. He would shout to the point where he knew Undertaker would be waiting for him at the gorilla position in the back behind the curtain when his match was over. He would intentionally take a different exit to try to get to the back to avoid the Undertaker. But he was getting raked over the coals by Undertaker and other people so badly to the point where there was one time, at least one night, where he was driving wherever he was going, maybe to the next city or his hotel. It's late at night. He's in his car driving and he just wanted to drive off a bridge. He thought about driving off of a bridge and just ending it all. That's how bad it was. That's how badly that he had so much anxiety about this. And just felt like he couldn't. He was making mistakes. What am I doing wrong? Undertaker's yelling at me every time. He almost drove off a bridge because he just said, I just got to end it all. Thankfully, he didn't do that. Said early in his career, he was super agile. He was doing moonsaults and missile drop kicks off the top rope, kip ups like he was Shawn Michaels. And Hulk Hogan and other people would tell him, I don't ever want to see you doing that stuff. You're a giant. You should not be doing moves that a cruiserweight would do. But, you know, Big Show would also want to make other guys look good. And, you know, he would take bumps for people that, frankly, probably he had no business taking bumps for. A few years ago, he chewed out Braun Strowman for doing the same thing. He said he saw Braun bump off a clothesline by Sami Zayn. He says, look, I love Sami. All due respect to Sami Zayn. But he pulled Braun aside in the back after that and said, don't ever do that again. You're the attraction, not Sami Zayn. Don't ever take bumps like that for somebody like Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn's half the size of Braun Strowman. He's bumping off a clothesline. He said, don't ever do that. He told a story about his debut at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre back in 99 when he came up from under the ring during the cage match with Austin and Vince McMahon and how the company had plans to headline WrestleMania the following year in 2000 with Austin against the Big Show. I don't think I've ever heard this before. But he claims that he was told flat out the plan for WrestleMania 2000 was going to be Stone Cold one-on-one against the Big Show. And of course, almost immediately after he debuted, that plan went right out the window. And a few weeks later, I believe it was the... Big Show made it sound like it was the night after his debut. It was actually several weeks later. I think it was the week before WrestleMania 15. I think it was the go-home episode of Monday Night Raw to WrestleMania 15. They booked a singles match for the first time ever, Stone Cold, one-on-one, against the Big Show, and they had Austin beat him clean with a stunner right in the middle of the ring. Now, Big Show's explanation for this, because that was a head-scratcher at the time, Big Show's explanation for this was he did not show them enough killer instinct that they were looking for behind the scenes. So they would come over to him, or Vince McMahon would come over to him and say, so what do you want to do? Like, what's your goal? What do you want to do? And he was just happy to be there. So his answer would basically be, whatever you want, I'll do whatever you guys want me to do. And he said that Vince McMahon didn't like that. He didn't think he had the chops, that he wasn't ruthless enough to step on other people, I guess, to get what he wanted. And he changed his mind. He said, fuck it, if he's not willing to fight for it, then you're going to beat him. You're going to beat him. Steve's going to beat him straight up. Now, I don't know that I buy that. Now, look, Big Show was there. I wasn't. I'm not saying he's lying. But to me, I hear that and I'm like, really? I don't know. That doesn't sound right to me. That might have been what he was told, that they were going to build to a WrestleMania match with him in Austin a year in advance. You know what that sounds like to me? That just sounds to me like they told him what they thought he wanted to hear. They fed him a bunch of BS and then turned around and they had Austin beat him on TV because he was a WCW guy. And they wanted to show that the WWF guys would always be better than the WCW guys. So that's my two cents on what was going on there. And if you don't think that they would be petty enough to do that, then you're not paying attention. He spoke of his love for playing Dungeons and Dragons. He is a big D&D fan. In fact, if you hop on YouTube, you'll find video of these long marathon sessions of D&D that the Big Show has played. It's quite something to see him sitting there for 6 hours at a table with other celebrities. And who's that guy? The actor, Joe Manganiello. He hosts these like big Dungeons and Dragons gatherings at his house and they stream it. And there's Big Show sitting there and he's, you know, looking at the board and he's rolling the dice. And anyway, he talked about that. He talked about his Netflix sitcom that's coming soon, The Big Show Show, where he plays a retired pro wrestler. He plays himself. He plays the Big Show. He's retired now. And his teenage daughter comes to live with him, maybe from another marriage, I guess. It's Big Show, his wife. There's two other daughters. And the other daughter comes to live with them. There's at least one episode where there are cameos by Mick Foley, Mark Henry, and Rikishi. They made guest appearances. It drops closer to WrestleMania time. There's no drop date yet for it. Netflix has not announced anything. WWE has not announced anything. I think Big Show said something about WrestleMania, like around WrestleMania. So we should be getting some kind of announcement about that in the next few weeks. I'm looking forward to watching it. I will check it out. I will watch at least the first episode and see what this show's about. Big Show's a funny guy. I feel like Big Show in a sitcom type of environment would actually shine. I think he would do well. So that was the Broken Skull sessions. They covered a lot of other ground. I would say if you have time, check it out. The other thing I watched was the WWE 24 documentary on R-Truth, Ron Killings, which was excellent. He got into his past and he had a passion for music, but to make money, he started selling drugs. He wound up in jail, which is where he met Jack Crockett. Jack Crockett was the son of, you know, the legendary promoter, Jim Crockett, still represented today. You know, the NWA is still doing Crockett Cup tournaments even to this very day. So he met Jack Crockett in jail. Jack had a DUI conviction, and I guess he had to spend 7 days in the slammer, and he was on a work release, so he was just constantly working a lot. And that's where he met Ron, and he took an interest in him, and he's the one who paid for Truth's training, his pro wrestling training, to break him into the business. And Truth never would have ended up in wrestling were it not for Jack Crockett. He's basically saved his life. Who knows where he would have ended up? And there's a scene in the park. They're in a park somewhere, and Jack Crockett is sitting at this bench. It's like a picnic bench, and he's being interviewed for the documentary. And I'm sure they must have known that this was being set up. Maybe not. Maybe they didn't tell Jack Crockett that Truth was going to be showing up. But it's one of these things where he's sitting there and he's being interviewed, and then all of a sudden you see Truth coming up from the background, like he's walking towards him. And Crockett spins around and he sees Truth, and there's this great scene of them reuniting. I don't know when the last time was that they even saw each other, and they stand up and they're hugging, and Truth takes his glasses off, and you could see he's crying, and this is really great stuff. Really great stuff. They have footage in here from his days in NWA Wildside, wrestling AJ Styles. They've got footage of him working Memphis. Road Dogg was there one night. He heard this kid rapping. He's in the back talking to somebody, and all of a sudden, I guess Truth is making an entrance, and he's like, whoa, who's that? Who's that kid rapping that I hear? And right away, he said, that's my new tag team partner. This was back in the K-Quick days. Then Road Dogg ended up getting fired a number of months later. That was the beginning of the end. About a year after that, they fired R-Truth, and he was very bitter about that. They never really gave him a reason why they were firing him, and they interviewed Jeff Jarrett for this, and they talked about him coming over to TNA, and they had footage from Impact. Impact has their Impact Plus service, and they loaned footage for WWE to use here. Back in the NWA TNA days of Truth coming in, he won the championship from Ken Shamrock. He was the NWA champion, and then he left. He came back to WWE. He did the Little Jimmy stuff, which was supposed to be about John Cena. He was supposed to call John Cena Little Jimmy. But he decided he ad-libbed, and it turned into, him talking about an imaginary friend. So that was kind of interesting. And every single person that they interview in this documentary to a T, every single person in this company right now has nothing but positive things to say about R-Truth. Nothing but praise for the guy. Everybody loves this man. And I'm still hoping we get some kind of interaction with him and John Cena at WrestleMania this year, even if it's just in a backstage segment. I'm sure it'll happen at some point. It may not be WrestleMania, but they've gotta pay this off somehow. Him coming on TV every week and using John Cena's moves. They've gotta pay this off at some point down the road. But this was great. So if you have a network sub, I would say watch those two things. If you only have time for one, definitely watch the R-Truth documentary. But this is the kind of content that really, I think, after the pay-per-views, this is the kind of content that really brings value to the network, and I don't think it gets talked about enough. Monday Night Raw was live from Winnipeg, you idiot, this past week. We got a screw job in Canada. There's something that I've never seen before. Twitter poll, over 2,400 votes, 44% thumbs up, 56% thumbs down. Score surprised me a little bit because we've had a few weeks where the show had a largely positive score. And I didn't think this episode was that much less enjoyable than those. I didn't think it was as good. But I didn't think it was a terrible show. There just wasn't anything overly exciting. It felt like they were in something of a holding pattern before Saudi Mania. But let's just run through some of the key points of this show here. The opening with Randy Orton and Kevin Owens I thought was very good. Owens was treated like a god, given that they were in Canada. Him telling the story of watching at home when Edge retired in 2011 and being very sad that he would never have the chance to wrestle him. And then feeling like a kid again when he saw Edge come back at the Royal Rumble, only for Orton to kill him off the next night and take that all away. I thought that worked. I thought him telling the story that way and personalizing it really worked. It resonated with people. Orton going, "You think you know me?" That got a nice little pop out of me. And that set up the main event for later in the show. Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo, they had a very good match, much better than the one they had on Thursday. Again, Garza wins. And now I'm starting to see other people coming around to the similarities that I pointed out a few weeks ago between Garza and Eddie Guerrero. There's only one Eddie Guerrero. There will only ever be one Eddie Guerrero, but I definitely get an Eddie vibe from this guy, and that's not a bad thing. That is not a bad person to be compared to. I did pick up on the announcers mentioning Zelina Vega's former client, Andrade, who's now back from his wellness suspension. The word former was just sort of thrown out there. That's the first time I've heard them mention the fact that the two of them may not be together anymore. I'm not saying they have been split up, but why would they say former client? That doesn't really make a lot of sense. We are getting a tag team match on Raw tomorrow night. It's going to be Andrade teaming up with Angel Garza. Take on Rey Mysterio and Carrillo. I think we may be getting a story similar to what I talked about last month, where Zelina's going to manage both of them, but Andrade is going to grow increasingly jealous, I think, of all the attention that Zelina is giving to him and the attention that everybody is giving to Garza. You know, Garza goes up to the guardrail, he's getting kisses from the women in the crowd. I think at some point that probably starts to get to Andrade, and I guess the only question is when the split happens, who's the babyface and who's the heel? I would say Andrade's the heel, and Garza should be the babyface. People like him. They genuinely like the guy. We had AJ Styles, Carl Anderson, and Luke Gallows. They were in the back after Gallows lost to Ricochet. Imagine how awful you have to be to lose to Ricochet, given that Ricochet lost in, what, 45 seconds? 60 seconds? 90 seconds? Whatever it was the other day. Although, Luke Gallows is no Brock Lesnar. But Gallows lost to Ricochet. So there in the back, all of a sudden, Aleister Black comes walking by. I guess he's getting ready for a match. So they call him out. They're like the bullies in high school. They see the kid walking by. They start laughing. They're mocking him. Hey, you think you're hot shit? You've won a few matches. You think you own the place? So they beat him up. Just like high school. They beat him up. And so we're going to get Black against AJ tomorrow night. Assuming that AJ has recovered from that devastating chokeslam at the hands of The Undertaker. With his hat on. I still can't get over the fact that they could not even be bothered to take his hat off. He could not even be bothered to take his hat off. It stayed on the entire time. It was like it was glued to his head. Later on, Aleister hobbled out to the ring for a rematch with Eric Rowan, who he beat again. Rowan couldn't even finish off an injured man who walked out to the ring selling it like he was half beaten to death. At one point, Rowan ran into the ring steps and accidentally knocked over his cage, which was still covered, and he was apologizing to whatever was inside the cage. That better be EC3 inside that cage. If anybody deserves an apology in this company, it's that guy. Black Mass finishes off Rowan. Brock Lesnar was back on Monday Night Raw. He got a huge babyface reaction, which is not surprising, considering he doesn't live very far from Winnipeg. He lives, I think, just west of the Manitoba border. Or at least he did. I haven't heard that he's moved back to the U.S., but I'm also not his travel agent. I'm not his broker. I'm not aware of all of his movements. Heyman used a line in his promo. And it's the standard Paul Heyman promo. I mean, Paul Heyman promos have pretty much been the same for the last, 6 years. But he just does such a good job delivering them that people can overlook it. But Heyman used the line here in this promo that my father would often use. And it's hard for me to even imagine that I lost them 5 years ago this month, which is insane. But my father would sometimes use this line, and Heyman used it here. He's talking about Ricochet. If Ricochet became WWE champion, if Ricochet did this, if Ricochet did that, it would change WrestleMania. And then Heyman goes, and if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. I've always loved that line. If is irrelevant, he said, because Brock is going to beat Ricochet and go to WrestleMania. And shockingly, Paul Heyman turned out to be right. Ricochet turned out to be an even bigger jabron than I thought he would. We got a pre-taped sit-down interview with Charlie interviewing Drew McIntyre. They showed highlights from a decade ago with Vince McMahon anointing him as the chosen one on SmackDown. That was before he and Taryn Terrell went to that party at the Playboy Mansion, and Drew was never really quite the same after that. He was never treated the same way. He did the three-man band stuff. He got fired. He talked about how it fueled him, and he came back, and now he gets to go to WrestleMania and fulfill his destiny. I'm all for doing background pieces like this. I thought this was pretty boring, though, if I'm being perfectly honest. I was kind of bored by this. Conceptually, though, I like it. I'd like for them to do more of it, but, just find a way to make it more interesting. Jerry Lawler hosted a contract signing for the Raw Women's Elimination Chamber match. Why we need a contract signing for an Elimination Chamber match was not explained. Asuka, Natty, Liv Morgan, Sarah Logan, and Ruby Riott were all out there. No Shayna Baszler. Somebody made a good point after last week's podcast with Kairi Sane getting married. And I was saying, how come she's not in the Elimination Chamber match? And they said, well, maybe she's on her honeymoon. Probably on a pirate ship somewhere. And maybe that's why she's not in the chamber match. And that's a great point. I don't know if she is going to be on her honeymoon or not, but that is a great point. If she's not, though, it makes very little sense why she would not be part of this. So after everybody signed, she being Shayna Baszler, comes out through the crowd. She signs the contract. Asuka tells Shayna, bite me. Liv Morgan absolutely just like a rocket just launched herself over the table onto Ruby Riott. It was hilarious. And as they're all brawling, Shayna just marvels at all the chaos around her, and she's smiling until Becky Lynch walks out wearing those ridiculous deal with it sunglasses. She had paid her fine in advance. Remember, she paid her fine in advance for the damage that she was going to do to Shayna Baszler. And so she comes out here to get her revenge for Shayna taking a chunk out of her neck a few weeks ago. And her big revenge was she just tackled her down and started throwing punches, which we see every single week on this show. But the way that she was talking about her getting revenge on Shayna Baszler, I was expecting her to shank her right there in the middle of the ring. So that was very underwhelming. And the crowd was into it, though. They were chanting, let them fight. It needs to be Shayna and Asuka as the final two in that chamber match. And then Shayna needs to win the championship decisively at WrestleMania. A year is a long time for Becky to hold on to that belt. But if she doesn't drop it and have something to chase for, that's when I think the fans are going to really start to turn on her. So they have a chance to really make Shayna out to be a killer. It is the only outcome that they should be considering right now for WrestleMania. Angelo Dawkins had a very forgettable match with Murphy, but the Monday Night Messiah pinned Montez Ford in a good match. It wasn't anything close to the match that Mr. Messiah had with Neville several years ago, and he was working with another younger guy. That was an incredible match with an incredible near fall for a near finish. In fact, this match here really wasn't anything special at all. It was good. It was nothing more. But it gets a thumbs up from me for getting Montez Ford in a singles match because that's where his future is going to be. This man is a star in the making. Angelo Dawkins is not. I'm sorry. I know that sounds harsh. That's just the way it is. That's just the fact of life. Dawkins will have a place on the show, but the star is Montez Ford. And this was a small taste of what's to come for him. Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. Owens fended off the Messiah, who tried to interfere. Orton caught Kevin Owens with a draping DDT and pinned him off of a fast count by the referee. The fact that I've never seen this referee before, I remember I'm looking at him going, I've never seen this guy before in my life. That should have been a red flag right there. Because since when do they assign a new referee to officiate main event matches on TV? That'd be like Garrett Bischoff reffing the WrestleMania main event. Back when he used to be doing some officiating in Impact. Owens grabbed the referee, ripped off his shirt to reveal a Monday Night Messiah shirt. So he was one of his parishioners, I guess. Owens gave the guy a stunner, he pulled a table out, he powerbombed him through the table. That wasn't very Christ-like of him. Not a very Christ-like move by Kevin Owens. I could have done without another Canadian screwjob, but at least we got a payoff with, you know, Owens destroying the kid. We never did get to see Roman Reigns pay back that stupid dog mascot on SmackDown. Per PW Insider, Edge is scheduled to return on the March 9th episode of Monday Night Raw. So not this week, but next. In Washington, D.C., WWE has already announced that his wife, Beth Phoenix, will be on Raw tomorrow night to address her husband's condition. I don't know if that means via satellite. I don't know if that means live in the building. I assume that means live in the arena. And if she's there, you could go one of two ways with this. The obvious is to get mega heat on Randy Orton. And I don't know if they would have the balls to do this by having him lay out Beth with an RKO. Or, and this would make the babyface look smart, which doesn't happen very often in WWE, Beth is there as a decoy. And it's all just a setup to make Orton think that Edge is not there, but he is. And he shows up, and he beats the shit out of Randy Orton until all the referees or cops or whoever pull him off. That would make Edge look very intelligent and very bright, that he got one over on the heel. The other thing to watch for is, with Beth being back on TV, is if they do anything to set up a match for WrestleMania with her and Natty challenging Asuka and Kairi for the women's tag team titles. That is the rumored match for WrestleMania. Beth looked good in the Royal Rumble. I mean, she was in there a long time. She got all bloodied up in the back of her head. She was in there, you know, for a while, but, you know, I hear this and it doesn't speak very well to the future for the women's tag team titles when the only big match they can come up with is a match that involves someone who's retired, is a match that involves an announcer who only works maybe a few matches a year, if that. That's the best they've got for these women's tag team belts. Why even have women's tag belts to begin with if you don't have an actual division? You know, but I get it. It's WrestleMania season. All your current talent has to take a back seat. You got to bring in big names, load up the show with big names, old names, legends, Hall of Famers. It's what they do every year. One last AEW note. AEW announced on Wednesday the signing of Lance Archer to a multi-year deal after spending the last 3 years with New Japan Pro Wrestling. He was part of the Killer Elite Squad tag team with Davey Boy Smith Jr. And when Davey left last summer, Archer entered the singles ranks and really tore it up, especially in the G1. He had a great opening match against Will Ospreay, but I think he only won 3 matches in the tournament, so his record didn't really reflect a lot of success, story-wise, but you know, performance-wise, he really turned it up. I know there was another match where he beat Evil. Then he won the U.S. title when Jon Moxley was forced to vacate it. He beat Juice Robinson to become the new champion. Then he lost the title to Moxley at Wrestle Kingdom in a great match. They had that Texas Death match. Archer's a big SOB, about 6'8", but he's 42 years old. Not a young guy by any means. But he broke out as a single star at just the right time. So he's a big get for AEW. And they're promoting him for Dynamite this Wednesday. I don't know if it's an appearance or if it's just an interview or if he's going to physically be there and show up or if he's going to attack anyone. I have no idea. He does have the history with Moxley. Moxley just won the championship. I don't know if they'll put the two of them together or not. They've got their ranking system they have to pay attention to. Doesn't mean Archer can't attack him. Doesn't mean Archer can't go after the champion just to establish himself on day one as some kind of dominant force. But I like the balance. You got Jeff Cobb. I don't know if he's going to sign or not. He hasn't signed a deal. He's kind of a big guy. Brody Lee may be on his way in. They've got Archer. And then they have a few other big guys. They've got Wardlow. They've got Luchasaurus. So even Hager. Hager's not a small man. So it just is a good counter to this argument that I still hear from some people who say that AEW is all about the small guys and the flips and the dives. And there is a lot of that. There's probably more than there should be. But you can't say that, well, there's no big guys or giants or anyone that I could look at and take seriously. Can't say that anymore. When they bring in people like Lance Archer, you can't say that anymore. You lose that argument. And because he, as big as he is, I think he'll stand out that much more. I think he'll do well. Now, NXT this past week, I thought NXT was a good show, but something's missing. It's missing that spark. And this is more, I think, than them just needing a change of scenery outside of Full Sail. On that note, they had a chance to do just that, to leave Full Sail for 1 week. And instead, on March 11th, because they're not going to have use of the NXT arena that night, NXT instead will air live from the Performance Center in Orlando, similar to that halftime heat match they did last year, Wednesday, March 11th, and what they are billing as Fan Appreciation Night. Keyword being fan. And you're not going to be able to fit very many of them inside the PC. That would have been the perfect chance to take the show on the road for 1 week. And my guess is that they're just worried that they wouldn't be able to sell enough tickets, I guess, in a decent-sized venue for something other than a takeover show. I mean, they went to Portland, and they packed the place. I don't know what the total was. They didn't sell it out, but they probably had every bit of 6, 7, 8,000 people in the building. You know, I don't know. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be able to move any tickets, but maybe that was their fear. So they're doing it at the PC instead for 1 week. The two big things on this show were Charlotte Flair returning to Full Sail and beating Bianca Belair, and then the tease of a match between Finn Balor and Walter for the NXT United Kingdom Championship. Doesn't mean they, you know, can't run with the idea that I had pitched last week to do a match between Balor and Adam Cole for the NXT title on the March 18th episode to give them one last chance to stop Cole from breaking Finn's record as the longest reigning NXT champion of all time. They absolutely can still do it. And you could always have Imperium run in and cost him the match, but absolutely it still works, and I still hope they do it. Balor says that he's not a moves guy. He comes out for a promo. He says, I'm not a moves guy. I'm not an office stooge. I build brands. I did it in Japan. I did it in Mexico. I was the Intercontinental Champion. I was the Universal Champion. What's next for Finn Balor? That's when Marcel Bartel, Fabian Aichner walk out. They reminded Balor that one thing he has not done is win the NXT UK title. Walter sends his regards. I love the way they say that. Walter sends his regards. Finn went after them. They beat him down, left him laying. I am all in on a Finn Balor-Walter match, and I could see Balor being the one to take the title from him, especially if they do this match at the UK TakeOver show they've got in Dublin, or Dublin, on April 26th. They're bringing NXT TakeOver to Dublin. They'll bring it to Ireland for the first time. How the hell do you not headline with Finn Balor in the main event of that show? But that's the only question. Do they do it WrestleMania weekend in Tampa, at TakeOver Tampa? Or do they save that for Dublin? I think you got to save it. I mean, that's a huge main event. Balor is going to be a mega babyface for that. Balor, I really think Finn Balor is at his best right now. Character-wise, his in-ring work, the intensity that he's got. He reminds me a lot of Pac and the work that Pac is doing right now, where Pac comes out, he's got that pissed off, mean scowl on his face. And Pac is, you know, he works kind of snug and stiff, and he's in there, and he's doing some of the best work he's ever done. I feel the same way about Balor. It just makes me sad, because the match I really would love to see is Balor against Pac. That's the match I'd like to see. Actually, wasn't that the match that got, I think that might be the match that got, it was either Balor or Pac got them a job in WWE. It might have been videotaped that somebody showed Triple H. I think it was of a Pac Prince Devitt match, if I'm not mistaken. But imagine the two of them doing the work that they're doing right now, putting them in the ring together for a match. That'd be incredible. Damian Priest interfered in the match between Dominik Dijakovic and Cameron Grimes. He busted Dijakovic in the back of the knee with a baton, like he was Nancy Kerrigan, minus all the crying. And Dijakovic did make it back into the ring before the count of 10. He kind of hopped inside, and then Grimes immediately double-stomped him and pinned him. Later on in the show, Damian was leaving the building with some ladies, got a lady on each arm. Sure, they were going to do some reading at the library. And he said that he wanted, in so many words, he basically said that he wanted a shot at Keith Lee's North American Championship. Keith Lee knows what I want, is what he said. We already know Dijakovic has said that he's not done with Keith Lee. He can't quit Keith Lee. So that sounds like we're probably getting a triple threat match in Tampa. Xia Li had a match. She beat Mia Yim. Nothing special. It didn't go very long. Mia was distracted by Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez, who came out to cut a promo. She was distracted, and so Mia rolled her up with a cradle for the pin, and Gonzalez took out both Mia and Xia Li when the match was over. Velveteen Dream was cutting a promo, and he said he wanted another match with Roderick Strong. This time he wanted it inside of a steel cage. And I thought to myself, you know, Dream has been the one who's been literally wearing imagery on his crotch, on his ass, on his legs, of Roddy's wife and his child. If I were Roderick Strong, I would be the one that wants Velveteen Dream in a cage. Instead, it's Velveteen Dream requesting a cage match. It feels a little ass backwards to me. But they're going to have a cage match, and that means we're not getting one cage match on NXT this Wednesday. We're getting two, because not only are we getting Velveteen Dream and Roderick Strong, we're getting Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai as well. Tommaso Ciampa beat Austin Theory with the fairy tale ending. I thought this was a good showing for Theory. Yeah. It's a 22-year-old kid. He's pretty good at this point. You would think he can only get better. Johnny Gargano attacked Ciampa when the match was over and laid him out. And obviously they're building to some kind of a stipulation. They've got to be building to a stip of some kind. I had floated maybe Hell in a Cell, first ever Hell in a Cell match in NXT, but they could do Last Man Standing, they could do I Quit. You know, any of those types of stipulations would probably make sense for this feud. Grizzled Young Veterans picked up the win over the Forgotten Sons of Anarchy. Now in the babyface role, does not make me any more interested in them, just because you've turned them babyface. But to give them a little bit of credit, Jackson Ryker. Jackson Ryker looks like $1 million. Physically, just he's you know, he's built. He's got that look you would think they would love. He looks like $1 million. I feel like he should be doing more than he is doing. But there's just nothing outside of the way he looks. He's very dull. I mean, what is there to be excited about? What is there to be interested in? There's something missing there. And this whole Sons of Anarchy gimmick is not doing it for me. Charlotte Flair made her big return to Full Sail to take on Bianca Belair. There's a point in the match where Charlotte went for a backflip off the top rope. I refuse to even call it a moonsault at this point. This was a fucking backflip. She landed right on her feet. I mean, just right on her feet. Caught Bianca's feet, flipped her over into a Boston Crab, and leaned back on it. I thought that looked cool. And Bianca countered out of it. Charlotte followed with the stretch muffler. I haven't seen that move in a long time. I remember when Brock Lesnar had more than four moves in his arsenal. It was more than just suplexes. And Brock used to use the stretch muffler. I vividly remember him twisting Chris Benoit into a pretzel. I think it was a television match on SmackDown in probably, I'm guessing, 2003, maybe late 02. Probably 03. And he had Benoit on this stretch muffler, and I remember thinking, man, that's a cool fucking move. And when you have Brock Lesnar putting you in a stretch muffler, it looks painful. So she put her in the stretch muffler and powerbombed her, got a near fall. So Bianca goes up top and jumps over Charlotte on the way down, and they trade spears back and forth. Charlotte hits a spear of her own, quickly hits natural selection, and gets the pin. This felt totally rushed at the end. There, no doubt in my mind they were running out of time. Referee was in their ear telling them, you guys got to wrap this up. So they rushed to the finish. Flair went to attack Bianca with the chair. The referee said something to Charlotte, and she went outside and grabbed the chair. All of a sudden, Rhea Ripley's music hits. The match at WrestleMania is Rhea defending against Charlotte. So out comes Rhea, but she is in no great rush to come down to the ring. She comes out. Her music is playing. Charlotte is taking a chair to Bianca Belair in the ring. And what does Rhea Ripley do? She waits and she does that stomp that she does to her music. And then she comes down to the ring. What the hell was that? That looks silly as shit. She takes the time to do her stomp. That's as stupid as all the baby faces who can't come out unless their theme music plays. I hate that kind of goofy bullshit. Why didn't she just run to the ring? Now she's got to do her stomp to the theme music. I thought that looked so stupid. Oh my God. I thought the match itself was good. I thought the match between Charlotte and Bianca was good. It's a shame that Bianca had to lose straight up. Now she's lost back-to-back matches to Rhea and to Charlotte. But I still have every expectation that we're going to see Bianca on either Raw or SmackDown. Hopefully SmackDown, because I feel like SmackDown can use her more. Sometime in the next few months. And I am sticking with my prediction that I made on the prediction show, that she is going to be holding Raw or SmackDown gold before this year is over. After a one-week hiatus, NWA Power was back this week. I'll just run through this real quick. There was a promo to open the show with Tim Storm, and this guy came out. It's the same guy who's been playing the fake Mama Storm now. Danny Deals, he comes out. He wants to make a deal. You know, door number one or door number two? I've got a guy. Do you want to team up with him or do you want to wrestle him? And all Tim Storm wants to do is beat the shit out of Danny Deals because he made fun of his mama. You don't make fun of Mama Storm. You don't do that. So out comes Jax Dane, who is an independent wrestler who held the 10 pounds of gold. He was the NWA champion for over a year. He's the one who lost the championship to Tim Storm when Tim Storm became the NWA champion 4 years ago. And so now Jax Dane is here. He's out for revenge on Tim Storm. They go nose to nose. And that was the entire segment. We had a triple threat with Zicky Dice, Matt Cross, and Ricky Starks. Non-title. And Zicky stole a win 3 minutes in. Matt Cross hit his shooting star and then got thrown out. And Zicky pinned Ricky Starks to earn himself a television championship match on Power this coming Tuesday. So now he will get himself a TV title shot. Trevor Murdoch beat the question mark in about 30 seconds. Sean Mooney interviewed Nick Aldis. And Aldis was talking about beating Flop Gordon, which got a nice chuckle out of me. He beat Flop Gordon at Hard Times, and, you know, now he's talking about, you know, it's not about, you've heard trickle-down economics. This is nickel-down economics. It was a really lame line, but, you know, the people pop for it anyway. So Aldis says, I'm going to give Marty Scurll one last chance to back out of this match at the Crockett Cup. I know he's here. I know he's in the back. I'm giving you one last chance to back out and get out of this match. And out comes Marty Scurll, and he's a house of fire. He takes his watch off. He takes his glasses off. He takes his jacket off, his shirt off. He gets in the ring. He's calling Nick Aldis in. Let's go. Let's do this right now. Why wait? All of a sudden, the other members of the Strictly Business faction come out. Royce Isaacs and Tom Latimer comes out, and Aldis is like, are you sure you want to do this? And Scurll says, yes, I'm sure. And as Aldis is about to get into the ring, out from the crowd comes Brody King from Villain Enterprises in Ring of Honor. And Brody King comes all the way down, and a big brawl breaks out. I was waiting for PCO to come out, but there was no PCO. And so they had a big brawl, and that was that whole segment. Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston, one of the best talkers in all of wrestling, comes out. He's taping up his fists. And he's talking about how it's time to bust somebody up. And he wants to fight the Pope. He's out for revenge on the Pope. And out comes the Pope. He dared him to come out. Pope comes out. And Pope is kind of taping his own fists up. But then he stops. He thinks better of it. He's, I'm not here to fight you. I'm not here to fight you. And he cuts a Pope promo, as only he can. And he says, I've got the money to do whatever I want. And the bouncers are out there. The bouncers from Ring of Honor, they're out there, right? Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis, they're out there backing up Eddie Kingston. And of course, when Pope says that I have the money to do whatever I want, and if I want a beer, it was like, if I want a beer, I can have a beer. And that was the cue for the bouncers to attack Eddie Kingston. And they beat the hell out of Eddie Kingston and laid him out. So the Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis have turned heel. And it looks like the bouncers might be managed now here by the Pope. They're going to challenge Eli Drake and James Storm on Power this week for the NWA Tag Team titles. And the show ended with what was supposed to be a women's championship defense. Thunder Rosa defending against Melina. And Melina's all up in her face. And Thunder Rosa's, you know, shoves her and says, come on, let's do this, let's go. Melina, she takes a powder. She rolls out to the floor. She goes up into the crowd. She gets counted out. She gets counted out. Allison Kay, she comes out. She meets Melina up top, says, no, 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 no. You're not going to get out of this so easily. And she chases her back down to the ring, drops her with a forearm, throws her into the ring. All of a sudden, Thunder Rosa, she is kind of standing back, watching all of this. Allison Kay's going to attack Melina when Camille appears from out of nowhere. A wild Camille appears. And she spears Allison Kay, leaves her laying in the ring. And that's how we went off the air. Camille, it looks like we might finally start to see Camille see some action on this show. Still haven't heard from her. You know, when I go on her Instagram page and I see little videos of her talking, it blows me away. I actually hear her voice. We have yet to hear her voice. We have yet to hear her speak. She's been a mute on this television show. I would sum this show up this way. As usual, they had good storyline advancement, some good promo work. I could listen to Eddie Kingston cut promos all day long. But the show was really lacking this week. You know, we had a non-match in the title match in the main event after being promoted for 2 weeks. You promote this women's championship match, and then you just have her leave, and there's no match. You have Trevor Murdoch wrestling a 30-second match. You've got, you know, Zicky Dice winning a triple threat that went barely 3 minutes. You know, I'm not saying you got to have big, long matches up and down the card. The strength of this show really is the strength of the characters and the promos, but you got to put some more meat on the bone. And I didn't think they did a good job of that this week. It's time for this week's RSPW Rewind. I thought this week I'd serve up a medley of different posts dating back 20 years to the year 2000. Remember that bit from Conan O'Brien? In the year 2000. In the year 2000. Anyway, let's jump all the way back to February 12th, 2000, in a post by The Punk, talking about Kurt Angle's finishing move. Kurt Angle was still a newbie to the company at the time. He had only made his debut at the Survivor Series a few months earlier. He says, Angle's finisher, that weak-looking fall-away slam, doesn't have any flair to it. It should be replaced with something a little more spectacular. I was thinking a fisherman suplex, like the kind Mr. Perfect used, or maybe a figure four leg lock. Anybody have other ideas? Yes, because when I think of a spectacular move, I think of a fisherman suplex. Why is it even called a fisherman suplex anyway? I've never seen any fisherman suplex people like that before. Unless the idea is that you're hooking your opponent's leg before you do it. Like you'd hook a fish. But that just sounds dumb. Crazy Joe Dudley, not to be confused with Crazy Joe Davola, suggests a much better move. How about a burning hammer, he asks. I can still remember gasping when I saw Brian Kendrick hit a burning hammer on Kota Ibushi in the Cruiserweight Classic, and Daniel Bryan is just freaking out on commentary. Scott says, this is not my idea, and I feel bad I can't remember who said it, but Kurt's finisher should be three German suplexes like Benoit is famous for, and he should call it the Three Eyes. Sorry for stealing that from whomever thought of it, but it is pure genius. It was Scott Keith, by the way. One Scott giving props to another. And Blitzer311 wins the thread with this. Angle should have three finishers. The right angle, the obtuse angle, and the perpendicular angle. Damn, I hate math. Storm Rider ruins the fun, though. He says a right angle and a perpendicular angle are the same thing. Maybe you mean obtuse and acute? So there's Professor Storm Rider with the correction. Executioner 1 says, Kurt's fallaway slam is a decent move, but it lacks as a finisher. I think that a submission hold would suit his talent the best, possibly a crossface chicken wing or a stump puller. How prescient of the executioner to suggest a submission hold for Kurt Angle's finisher. June 21st, 2001, Not Eric says, WWE released American Dragon and Joey Abs. Yes, they had Daniel Bryan under contract as far back as 2000, and they fired him the following year. This is when WWE made the decision to close down its developmental territory in Memphis. Some guys were going to be relocated to another territory in Cincinnati. Others were just going to be let go. And so one by one, they marched them into an office to meet with some person from talent relations, and Bryan was one of the ones who got let go. Which in hindsight turned out to be the best thing that could have happened to him, because if they don't fire him in 2001, then, you know, their plan was to possibly use him in their latest attempt at the time at a cruiserweight division, and he would have been dead in the water. If they kept him around to use him as a cruiserweight, that would have been it. He would have been dead. And we never would have gotten American Dragon, Ring of Honor World Champion Bryan Danielson, working with some of the best talent all over the world. But on RSPW at the time, people seemed more upset that Joey Abs got the boot rather than Bryan Danielson. Drazik, the number one sick boy, says, oh, for fuck's sake, Abs was one of the most underused guys on the roster. They wasted his effing time and hours while we were waiting for his repackaging. I feel sick. The promotion killer says, you feel your time was wasted while you waited for a member of the Mean Street Posse to be repackaged, and now you feel sick? Man, that's not right. Eddie Florick says, I can understand why they released American Dragon and Joey Abs. Dragon had some attitude problems, and Abs wasn't really improving, but it's still sad to see them go. American Dragon had a lot of potential, too. That is, if he could learn to cut a promo. Ring skills alone will not cut it in WWE. Hopefully he'll go to Japan, where his ring work will be appreciated. And Froggy in the Meadow Under the Log says, I love that name, Jason Arndt was more talented than 95% of the WWF roster. He's 100 times more talented than either of the other two, quote, workers who were part of the Mean Street Posse, but they get to keep their jobs because they're Shane O'Mac's friends. Jason Arndt, former Shotgun God and the guy who almost made Billy Gunn look good once on Heat, I hope you find a niche somewhere else. It should be noted that Rodney and Pete Gass were both let go that same year by WWE, so even Shane O'Mac apparently only had so much pull back then. It's too bad we never got to see Rodney with his new gimmick on TV. For a while, he wound up in developmental working under the name Rod Rageous. That was the name that he was using, Rod Rageous. I think it was down in the Memphis territory. June 29th, 2002, Horatio P. Dirt, with a post titled, Yes, NWA signs Chris Daniels. Says, I haven't heard this talked about much on this news group, but I hear that NWA recently signed Christopher Daniels, one of the best cruiserweights in independent wrestling. This is a great sign that the NWA is recognizing the X Division as one of its main strengths and is willing to properly expand it. This is a style of pro wrestling that is very entertaining and interesting to watch, and that the WWE, for whatever reason, seems unwilling to promote. I will buy the NWA regularly if they feature lots of great X Division matches. They should get Sabu, Elix Skipper, Mike Modest, and Super Crazy next. Deathlar responds, wonderful! Can't wait to see him jerking the curtain during his tenure, after which he will come back to Japan and be Curry Man again. By the way, is America ready for the Curry Man gimmick? Travman864 says, we need Curry Man here. Too bad the gimmick will just go whoosh right over most casual fans' heads. Crossface Walls says, come on, Chris Daniels is so 2001. Don't you know that the Super Marks, or Super Smarks, cream their shorts for Low Key or American Dragon now? And Ripclaw says, I think it's half love Low-key, half think that he's just a careless, no-caring SOB who kicks too hard, and American Dragon is loved. Well, American Dragon is loved. He got that part right 18 years ago. July 7th, 2002, another post by Horatio P. Dirt, this one titled, That New Ring of Honor Show Sounds Awesome. I've read a few reviews about the latest Ring of Honor show, and I am seriously considering ordering the video instead of this month's WWE pay-per-view. I hear there are just a ton of awesome work-rate matches with a lot of the best stars from the current independent scene. I have to say that I have really lost faith in the WWE lately, due in great part to their philosophy of apparently only having one generic wrestling style for all of their matches. Unfortunately, this prevents them from promoting the fast-paced WCW cruiserweight style that I think is entertaining. I was hoping WWE would get a clue that stuff like Ring of Honor is probably the future of pro wrestling. But whoever makes the decisions there apparently disagrees. At any rate, as a fan, I am shifting my loyalty towards Ring of Honor. Being that Ring of Honor is more based on matches and less on storylines, I think that even being a promotion that one day could exist, promoting monthly pay-per-views without regular television, once it gains enough of a following. So he's saying that Ring of Honor could be that promotion, that one day will have the big monthly shows, even if they don't have TV, but they need to build up their following a little bit more. What's interesting about what he said in that post is he mentioned that the Ring of Honor style he sees as being the future. That's where the future of wrestling is going to be. That's where things are headed. WWE is just being very slow to catch up. It turns out he was 100% right. That's all WWE is now. They have basically taken that style that we used to see in Ring of Honor, that Ring of Honor became popular for, with the smaller performers and the constant kickouts of finishing moves and all that kind of stuff. All of that has been basically, it's migrated over, for better or worse, to WWE. So he wasn't wrong when he said that this style is the future of wrestling. He was actually right on the money. Jeff says, another federation for Vince to crush. Who is a part of this Ring of Honor? Griffin801 says, I purchased videos of the first two ROH shows and have ordered the next two. I was very impressed by the wrestling skills displayed, and it was good to see some familiar faces alongside some new ones. I hope the new Fed continues and prospers. And Joey Image says, all of Rob's shows are great. Vince won't crush ROH. I know Rob. He's a fighter, and he won't give up. And then he gives the URL here in this post for the Ring of Honor website and calls it an exceptional alternative to the WWF. He wasn't wrong. Again, WWE clearly saw it the same way because they ended up poaching a lot of their stars from Ring of Honor, and with NXT now, basically created their own version of Ring of Honor. Triple H created his own indie promotion. And that's one of the reasons I think that Ring of Honor has sort of stagnated over the years. You know, what once set them apart from WWE is no longer unique to them. WWE, they've hoarded a lot of talent that might have gone to Ring of Honor, and now you have AEW, you've got New Japan is more popular here in the U.S. than it used to be. There's so much great wrestling out there. Ring of Honor needs to figure out what sets it apart from everybody else, because what once made them unique, they don't have that anymore. And the Rob that he is referring to in that post is Rob Feinstein, who owned Ring of Honor. He was ousted in 2004 after he got caught in a sting operation going to the home of an underage boy. You know, maybe they were going to play Dungeons and Dragons with Big Show, who knows. Feinstein has claimed in the years since that there was a lot of backstage drama going on at the time in Ring of Honor, and he was set up. He was set up to take the fall. And that's his version of events. And one last post that ties in with the American Dragon one from 2001. This one moves the timeline ahead all the way to September 5th, 2009. Danielson and McGuinness, how far will they get in WWE? Brian and Nigel had both left Ring of Honor, and they had signed with WWE at the same time. It was a huge blow to Ring of Honor, losing Danielson and McGuinness at the same time. This was in the summer of 2009. And RSPW Live had this to say about that. I haven't been following the wrestling news much lately, but I was surprised WWE brought in both Danielson and McGuinness so quickly. I noticed you all are already predicting that neither one will stay long in WWE. My question is, how far will they get in the company during their time there? I think the most likely answer is either man never having a regular place on the Raw, SmackDown, or ECW rosters, or I think they may be used as a lower to mid-card tag team. Kind of like Heart Foundation 2.0. This is an example of one of the main things I can barely stand about wrestling anymore. You know, Danielson and McGuinness both would have been huge deals back in the days of WWE against WCW. Okay, maybe in WCW they still would have been lower to mid-card, but a point would have been made to sign them and get them right on TV. Back then, I think WWE would have gone wild trying to get them over as stars. A lot of the fun back then was hearing about an ECW star getting signed by the big leagues and then watching them make their debut. It's frustrating to me as a fan to see independent slash small company wrestling producing wrestlers that may be the most innovative in the ring ever, and WWE barely showcasing them. Of course, the exception seems to be CM Punk, and I really have no idea why. JC Gilbert says, actually, WWE was wise to sign them both. Bryan Danielson was trained by Shawn Michaels and previously was used as a rent-a-jobber for TV in a squash a few years ago. I see him going to SmackDown, where a feud with CM Punk would be a natural. The Anaconda Vice, Punk's original finisher, is making a comeback at Breaking Point. Match it with Danielson's cattle mutilation, and I think you'll get a phenomenal match. Nigel McGuinness, though, is bound for ECW, I think. He's a better fit for William Regal's Ruthless Roundtable than someone like, for example, Ezekiel Jackson, the lone American in the group. I think both men will end up winning titles in WWE. Also, some of WWE's frontline main event talents are getting long in the tooth. Triple H just turned 40. Shawn Michaels is 44. Undertaker is 40-something as well. Chris Jericho isn't that far off. John Cena's in his 30s. Randy Orton is not yet 30, I think. A gradual transition phase is in order, but it just becomes a matter of how soon Vince realizes the need to take that step. Of course, I love the fact that I've got this post to read in a week where they had Bill Goldberg win the championship by beating The Fiend, and The Undertaker pinned AJ Styles in 20 seconds, and Brock Lesnar pinned Ricochet without him getting a single offensive move off in 90 seconds. I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. Unbelievable. Jason Todd says, neither of them will be in WWE in another 18 months. WWE is stuck right now having their guys wrestle a certain style. If the indie guys have to subsume their identities in order to work in that style, people will wonder, well, what's the big deal? Ergo, they don't get over, and Vince McMahon says, well, shit, these guys can't get over, and then boom, they're gone. And he makes a great point there. Nice name, too, Jason. He makes a great point because if you have guys that are very unique in the style that they wrestle, and you sign them, right? There's something about them that you liked. So you sign them, you bring them in, and you say, you can't do that. Don't do that anymore. Slow it down. Work the WWE style. Well, then what the fuck is so special about them? And I feel like they probably did do that with a lot of guys. You see it from time to time. You'll see somebody working on an independent show, and then they come to WWE, and it's like, is this the same person? What happened? Why does it feel so different? Why don't they feel as special? Because you have to conform to the way things are. And then they lose their uniqueness. So I think he actually makes a very good point in that respect. Raymond Daly shares a similar pessimism about their potential in WWE. Says, neither man will ever make it to WWE proper. They will be kept in FCW and made to job there and bound to ridiculous contracts that forbid them from ever going back to Ring of Honor or moving to TNA. Vince only bought them to stop Ring of Honor from getting ratings. Can you not smell the fear? And finally, Griffin801 adds to the despair. He says, McMahon just doesn't support or push wrestlers that he did not originate and develop. So I'm afraid both these great talents will shortly be buried. Too damn bad, but no surprise. I hope they both get some good money before they disappear. Well, Nigel McGuinness had the issues with the biceps, where they signed him, or were about to, whatever. And then he had his medicals done, and they said, well, we can't sign you. And that was a real blow for him. He ended up going to TNA. But that was a really shitty thing that ended up happening to him. Of course, it's worth mentioning that a decade later, Daniel Bryan is one of the top stars in the company. He once headlined WrestleMania and became the champion. Nigel McGuinness, he's arguably one of the best announcers in the company right now. And both of them are on television and are visible pretty much every single week. So I'm happy to say that Griffin801 was wrong in his assessment of their future. He was incorrect. This has been your weekly reminder that sometimes WWE gets it right, even when they bring in people who already got over in another promotion. Unless your name is EC3. Let's take a few questions here and wrap this bad boy up. If you have mailbag questions, you can always email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Kenneth from New Jersey. For many years, Edge has said that he never wanted Alter Bridge to play live at WrestleMania because he was a heel. With his return now, do you think that it would be a perfect time for him to have them perform? Also, Drew McIntyre has said that he would like for one time only at WrestleMania to come out to Broken Dreams. Do you think that he should? Yeah, I think Alter Bridge performing for Edge at WrestleMania would be great, although at WrestleMania, having a band perform your song live is usually a bad luck charm. Right? It was for Triple H at WrestleMania 17 and WrestleMania 21 with Motorhead. CM Punk had Living Color perform him down to the ring at WrestleMania 29, and he lost. Randy Orton at WrestleMania 30 had Rev Theory perform his song. He lost. Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30. I mean, need I say more? Sasha Banks at WrestleMania 32 with Snoop Dogg singing her down to the ring. She lost. Even last year, look at last year, Joan Jett played Ronda Rousey down to the ring, and she lost. Maybe Edge can have Alter Bridge swerve everybody and play Randy Orton's theme instead, and then maybe he'll win. Broken Dreams is a much better theme for Drew McIntyre. I know he's wanted that song back since he came back to WWE. I've heard that. Not just for one night. I mean, WrestleMania would be a great place to bring it back. But it's a Jim Johnston song. You know, it's like the Sheamus thing last week. If they already transitioned him to a non-Jim Johnston theme, which they have. Gallantry is the name of his current theme. I don't know that they want to then go back and use the old one. So I don't see it happening, but they totally should. And by the way, just to add to the point that I made about bad luck and live performances, it goes beyond even WrestleMania. Look at Cody last night at the AEW pay-per-view at Revolution. He had Downstate perform him to the ring, and he lost. So if I were Edge, I might think twice about having Alter Bridge perform for me at WrestleMania. Orlando from Philadelphia couldn't help but sit here and really think, when was the last time we had a really good back-and-forth promo in WWE? The closest thing that comes to mind is when John Cena ran down Roman Reigns that one time. What do you think? Yeah, I mean, that probably would be it. And Cena absolutely destroyed him. I mean, I remember debating people about this at the time. They're like, nope, Roman Reigns, he held his own. You could say that Roman Reigns held his own. I know he said bitch a whole bunch of times. I guess that's supposed to be really impressive. Ooh, bitch this, bitch that. Very cool. But John Cena absolutely obliterated him in that promo battle that they had a few years ago. Now, he put him over in the match. Cena lost to him, and he put him over in the ring. But on the mic, John Cena embarrassed that man. Cena was just on another level. Steve from Albany, New York. I thought the only Royal Rumble match that The Undertaker ever won came in 2007, but I learned today that he actually won a Rumble match in Japan in the mid-90s. Did you know about this, and have you ever seen the match before? Well, I have now. I know I've covered the lost Royal Rumble match from Madison Square Garden on this show before. 5 days before the Royal Rumble pay-per-view in 1994, Owen Hart won a Royal Rumble match that took place in Madison Square Garden. That was 5 days before Bret Hart and Lex Luger went out over the top rope in their pay-per-view match. And you can find fan cam footage of that online, but I don't think I've ever mentioned the Osaka Rumble a few months later. There were actually three Royal Rumble matches in 1994, two of which were never broadcast on TV. One was the Owen Hart one that I just mentioned. And then this one. I had to look this one up. May 9th, 1994, in Osaka at Castle Hall. The Undertaker was on sabbatical at the time. He had not been seen on television since the casket match with Yokozuna in January. He missed his first WrestleMania that year since he had debuted in the company. And he did not come back to TV until SummerSlam. That was when they did The Undertaker against The Underfaker. But he did work a series of live events in Japan in May. And he also worked a show in Guam. And he worked a show in Honolulu. But then he didn't work again until August. The show in Osaka had an 18-man Royal Rumble match that he won. So technically, The Undertaker is a two-time Royal Rumble winner. I did not know that. I had to look this up, I had to do my homework, I had to do my research, I did not know that. And you can find fan cam footage of that match as well. It's up on YouTube. It was only uploaded to YouTube last summer. Someone uploaded it last summer to YouTube. It is not the complete match. The complete match apparently ran about 46 minutes. This video that you'll find is only about 20 minutes long, so it picks up in the middle, I guess. But if you type in, "The Undertaker wins the Royal Rumble," type that into YouTube. It's a few results down. It's on the channel for somebody called the Immortal Deadman, who I'm assuming is an Undertaker fan. Just search for it, and you can watch it. I mean, the footage, look, it's fan cam footage. It's not great quality, but you can make out what's going on. And it's one of those rare finds that even I didn't know about this until just recently. And then I'm looking it up, and I'm watching it, and here I am watching something that, after 30 plus years of watching this shit, I've never seen before. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, keep sending your questions in to the mailbag, thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. I am planning on hopefully getting a new video inbox, a new video mailbag. I haven't done one in many, many weeks. I do want to get one up on the YouTube channel, ideally in the next 2 weeks, but I have to just finish putting the mailbag together and then find time to just sit down and record it. So again, you never know when you email me. Those questions, if you don't hear them on the podcast, they could end up on the video mailbox. So keep sending them in. Follow me on Twitter, @SolemnMonster. We passed 30,000 followers on Twitter this week, so thank you very much for that. We kicked all kinds of asses with these live streams this week. The live stream on Wednesday, the live stream on Thursday, the one last night. If you missed any of it, if you missed the Super Showdown one, I was way more animated than normal because, well, for obvious reasons. So if you want to hear about that shit show, you can find the stream on YouTube. It's on there. It's got about 50,000 views now. And then the AEW Revolution stream was a fun one last night. Had some good phone calls there at the end. So thank you to everybody who participated. If you called in, if you were in the live chat, thank you to the mods in the live chat, by the way, for trying to keep the peace. I appreciate all your help. Steve, for all of his great graphics work every week, as always, one of my biggest supporters. And everybody who super chatted, everybody who sent in a PayPal donation, you guys are awesome. You guys really killed it this week. So hopefully now we'll have an equally good month of March, as we are now in a brand new month. I think next Sunday is actually daylight savings. And I know the phrase is spring forward, fall back. I prefer the fall back part. That way we gain an hour. The fact that I'm going to lose an hour next Sunday when I don't even have an hour to lose is bullshit. Total bullshit. But yes, next weekend, don't forget to set the clocks, I guess, forward an hour next Saturday night, Sunday morning before you go to bed. I will see you back here for episode 642 next Sunday. I will be going live on YouTube again for my Dynamite stream this Wednesday. I'm going to try to get predictions up for the Elimination Chamber later in the week if I can. But next weekend, you get another double dose of the podcast, 642, and then I'll have my Elimination Chamber live stream because the work never ends. Take care, guys. I'll see you Wednesday night.
The Solemnmonster sounds off.
Hello.
This is Morrison versus Adam Cole, Morrison versus Finn Balor, Morrison versus Tommaso Ciampa, Morrison versus Keith.
Let me ask you a question. Were you drinking during the pay-per-view tonight?
I was.
Okay, I thought so. See, I thought so. Okay.
The Solemnmonster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolemnmonster for sound off extras and more. And follow The Solemnmonster on Twitter @Solemnmonster.
Solemnmonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solemnmonster sounds off.